Cold One knows that your skin changes all the time. Like waking feeling hydrated, only to have dry skin after a walk on a cold day. Or having dull skin at work, to glowing skin for date night. People don't have one skin, they have skins. And Gold Bond Lotion's clinically proven formulas contain 7 nourishing moisturizers, plus 3 vitamins to help you take care of all of them for all your skins. Gold Bond. Visit goldbond.com to learn more.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Australian survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million. Rubli.
Try the spoke.
The
adventure of a lifetime.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RJP's coverage of Survivor 39, Island of the Idols on Survivor Global. I'm your host, Shannon Guth, previously Gates, here to talk about the finale, and it's going to be a great time for such an epic episode and an end to the season. I did need to bring in an amazing guest, so I brought in an actual Australian Survivor All-Star. Please welcome the great Nick Iadanza. Nick, thank you so much for coming to Survivor Global.
Thank you, but it feels so weird to hear you be introduced as Shannon Guth. Like, that's it's taking my little brain like a while to kind of wrap my head around it. But I'm living for it. I like it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Shannon.
Thank you for coming onto the podcast. I knew I wanted to wrap up the season, come back from a little bit of a hiatus and do Survivor Global. I did not have the energy to like really organize it, so I just like texted you. I'm like, we're going to talk about it, and I feel like that's exactly what I want to do.
Well, I think it's pretty lazy on your behalf. You know, you don't have anything major going on in your life at this point. Like that, I think it's pretty lazy that you haven't been producing Survivor Global episodes weekly, and you should be ashamed of your lack of input to the Survivor community.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really big thing happen in my life a few weeks ago, which prevented Survivor Global, because I went on to the Survivor Know-It-Alls, which is like the biggest thing to ever happen to me. Literally, I know you were expecting the wedding thing, that's where I was intending for the joke to go, but yeah, Know-It-Alls was really what was preventing Survivor Global for a while, but I'm happy to be back, I'm happy to talk about it.
Well, can I just say that, like, obviously, I like chatting Survivor with you is just great always, but hanging out at your wedding is even better. And to all the Shannon Gus Gates fans out there, I flew the flag for us at the wedding, and I had an absolute ball, Shannon. So thank you for inviting me here today, and thank you for having me at your wedding.
Thank you for coming, and you brought your whole family to Melbourne from Adelaide for the wedding, and that was amazing. Like, you know, to have you there as an individual person was great, but it really was amazing to have like that corner of my life, the Survivor side, the RHAP side, like represented in you. My dad even called you out in the speech, which I'm sure you like absolutely hated so much. I was like, oh dad, like please just leave Nick alone. Like, my friends are already asking for photos with him, like just let him live. But
no, it was
amazing.
It was funny. You had a great night. Your family is just unreal. I got to sit next to your brother. I got the Jason, you know, I got to sit next to him and your cousin, and they were just absolutely just so welcoming. So guys, I can, as the reporter in the field, I can report that there was a lot of love on the night, and yeah, it was just such a great day to be involved.
I did love that. I did that. I put Nick at the family table, most important table in the whole room, next to my brother, literally the most important spot.
I said to Christine, I was like, I will just be chucked at the back, like with the, you know, with like on the, like the vendor table where like the band gets their meal, or like, you know, maybe like with the people, you know, the wedding singer was like the freaks on table 9 or whatever it is. So I was like, yeah, just chuck me at the back. And then, oh, well, cool. I'm right at the front. This is very cool.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we were going to always put you at the most important table because people were fighting for you. Like, my friends wanted you at their table. My cousin Jason were like, no, you're not moving Nick from our table. So, like, we had to put you there.
It was very, very flattering. Very great night. But, yes, it was going to a Jewish wedding was one of the coolest things I've ever been to. And, I think that, I'm Italian. We have big weddings where there's lots of tradition and culture, but we've got nothing on you guys. Like, that was unreal. The dancing, the music,
the horrors,
the violent horrors. Yeah, it was amazing.
So, fun story about the horrors before we talk about Survivor that I promised my husband I would not tell. So he threw up during the horrors. Did we talk about this?
Yes, I was there.
Okay, so many people have said they were there. So he like ran over the deck, actually really towards the beginning of the horrors. It really wasn't even in the middle because he was being spun around so many times and he like threw up over the deck, which was not in the theme of my royal wedding, but whatever. But like simultaneously, because the guys and the girls are separated, I didn't know what was going on. So I'm like, I'll start a conga line.
This was the funniest.
Like, I was like, I'll start a conga line and I'll lead them out into the deck. So I like led all the women in the wedding, like in a dance, like past Peter throwing up over the deck.
I was standing there on the deck and I could see the conga line coming and I was like, no, you're about to walk like 100 people past your vomiting husband.
I was like, oh my God, what is happening over there? And then we just like did a tour. It was like, there's the beautiful lake. There is my husband vomiting 2 minutes into the horrors and we're going back into the dance floor. So yeah, it was a wild wedding. Like, I feel like that story sums up. The rest I think was really elegant and like that, we just told that story. So that's what people will go away with.
Yeah, it was great. It was everything I wanted it to be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. That's the wedding talk. Let's talk about Survivor, Nick, because this must be a weird one for you to be on in between being on Survivor and then going, it airing your season of Survivor. What did you think about the finale? And then we'll talk about like the season at large.
Yeah, it's a bit of a all Survivor all the time for me at the moment. That's kind of a bit exhausting, but it's nice to kind of not only dip out of the Survivor world, but dip out of the Survivor AU world and kind of just like, see what's going on in US Survivor. I've actually enjoyed watching large portions of this season. Obviously, there's been all the other stuff going on, which has detracted from it. But I've actually enjoyed a lot of the characters. The thing that I feel, and I don't know whether this is because I'm a Survivor player or not, is that I really do feel for the other players on the season that and Kelly spoke about it at the reunion, that the defining memory, I guess, of season 39 will be the negativity. And I feel like it's probably our job to, yes, we need to touch on that, but also like give credence to the fact that there was a lot of good gameplay going on and some really good Survivor characters for the ages. And I think that it's important that we focus on that part of it today. Because as a Survivor fan, like, it does feel really refreshing to kind of get back into that stuff. Like, I thought the finale was great. I really, really enjoyed every aspect of it. And I don't know whether it's because Dan wasn't there, but I actually forgot about that part of the season. And I know we don't want to kind of like, erase the terrible parts from our like, terrible things happen in life. We need to talk about them. But it was just really nice after a few weeks of just the heaviness. I don't know if you felt that.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good that Dan was gone. Because like even in the episodes in between, it was just so cringe every time he was there. Like, it hurt my heart that his son was out there. Like, I hated all of that so much. And yeah, it was great to kind of not move on from that, but kind of like try and move forward from that. And now that the show is finally coming to the party and actually owning up to what they did, made it a lot easier for me to swallow as well. They put out a statement like the day before the finale, finally accepting some culpability, saying they could have handled things better, talking about the changes they're going to make going forward. So like, I felt like, okay, so now you've actually accepted this and we can try and move forward together. Before, it was hard for me to move forward because I felt like nothing had been resolved. Not that this has been resolved, but at least we're making a change towards it. So yeah, for me, I really enjoyed the finale. The last few weeks, I haven't hugely enjoyed since I last podcasted, which might be a me thing. Again, like a bit disconnected from the show, getting married, etc. Dan being there took a bit away from it. My anger at the show that they wouldn't just own up to the fact that they hadn't handled this right. And also just like strategically, I think like it got a little boring. Like it turned into a pogonging very like subtly. And you're like, oh, this is now like all unanimous votes. besides Karishma playing the idol, it really did become this like large pagomi.
Definitely. And I guess the other reason why I feel like it kind of like takes a hit is so many people saw Tommy's win coming from a really, really like episode one, like a lot of preseason with Tommy, like it, that kind of detracts from it. And I know that that's probably part of us being so in the community and we're like so looking at edits and hearing what other people's winner picks are. Whereas I think that the general viewer would have been, I don't know, pleasantly surprised maybe that he won. I like Tommy, and I feel like he is probably feeling like his win was overshadowed not only by the fact that he, you know, the season he was on, but also the fact that so many people called him boring and he didn't get any advantages or idols. But I think that what he's feeling now, as in that might be a negative, will eventually be what holds him in the greatest stead when people come to consider him in their winner rankings. So just hold in there, Tommy. Like, history will remember you for something better than what you currently think it will remember you as. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very hyped up about Tommy's win right now. I would say solid but unspectacular is where I'm putting him in my winner rankings. But look, it wasn't just that Tommy was winning, really, obviously. It was also that if you had asked most people to give you, like, the order of this finale, Janet's clearly going to Fire with the Nullifier. Lauren's going to lose at Fire because if she was sitting at the final three, it was clear that she would beat Tommy, but it was clear from the edit that she wasn't winning over Tommy. Tommy's going to win, and Nora's getting no votes. I don't, maybe Dean getting two votes was a little bit of a surprise. So it was pretty much down the line. But what made me so excited about this finale and about the Tommy win was that he didn't win a challenge at Fireball. He never won a challenge at any point. Didn't find the idol.
He won the family reward.
Fine, he didn't win immunity, though. So he didn't win immunity. He didn't find an idol. He didn't get an advantage. And he won from the Fire Maid goat spot. And earlier in the first episode of Survivor Global, I was like, is that a possibility? I don't think that could ever happen. And here it has happened. The fact that Tommy got himself, firstly manipulated his way into the final three without needing to make Fire, I think was his best, most flashy move in the game. I love that. And the fact that the jury could reward that, I know it's been said, but like for that to be validated, I felt the complete opposite of how I felt coming out of Edge of Extinction, where I felt like dismissed by the game. I felt like every value that I have in the game was completely dismissed, where you had someone who wasn't even in the game, who even when he came back in the game was like constantly immune, and he put himself into Fire, which like I didn't think was that impressive because he had perfect jury information, and he was even received the most votes or was saved by an idol. I was like, can this guy get through a vote? And the jury rewarded the fact that he didn't need to get through votes. Whereas Tommy was someone who was never immune and didn't need to be, and the fact that the jury could reward that, I felt was like the reversal of what I just saw on Edge of Extinction.
And yes, you're correct. And what that tells me and what that should tell everyone is that there is no one way to win Survivor.
But there like, has there's been
no
recently.
I still, even with all the trends that have been happening and, you know, you need the idols, there is no one surefire way to play. And I like that there has been this like sudden reversal of like, you know, if Dean had taken out the win because he got all these flashy little tricks and things at the very end, I would have felt really like disheartened by this season, even more than I already had. And I think it's a good reminder that there is no one way to do it, and that will open the door for people to not feel kind of like burdened by the legacy of what modern Survivor is. And that's incredibly refreshing for me. And it's kind of like what Nora was saying about like, you know, just I'm a really unique Survivor player. Like I do things my way. And while that argument gained no traction, I actually feel like it is encompassing this argument that we're talking about here, that it is unique every single time. And even when we think we're falling into a bit of a pattern, like anyone at any point can come along and disrupt that given the right circumstances. And that's very empowering.
Yeah, well, people are going to go, you know, and play in diverse ways, but I think what has happened is that the show has been so overrun with mechanisms in the modern game that, like, the show has kind of dictated some outcomes rather than the players getting to dictate it, which meant that, you know, some game styles, usually that, like, beta social game style, has been really stifled, and other game styles get a leg up. It's like if your game style is finding idols, you have, you know, so many idols to find. So to see that kind of the fact that the social game could win out here, the fact that modern juries who have the, you know, big moves era shoved down their throats, that they would reward Tommy whose game was such an extreme of the social game. I mean, the fact that he was the one person who didn't go visit Rob and Sandra in Island of the Idols, like the season that has had more idols in history, and he didn't find, he was one of the only people who didn't find one, compared to Dean, who really was like the epitomization of the flashy game. He had more trinkets than Chris Underwood did, and he also didn't get voted out, but he had won an extra immunity, he had a nullifier, he had an idol, he played Kelly's idol earlier in the season as well, he had that fake legacy advantage, which somehow wasn't completely dismissed by the jury, which I thought was very kind. So he had all of these trinkets, and he was the epitomization of this like big flashy game, and the jury still chose to reward Tommy's game, and I feel like my values have therefore been validated, so I felt really pumped up by that.
I don't think that Dean, though, like, yes, he had all those things, but a lot of them were like, I feel like his personality, though, is never going to be like equated with big flashy, like, you know, even Tommy says that, like, Dean just kind of sits around all day. Like, I feel like none of his moves, like, there was the Kelly idol, which happened pre-merge, so it's easy to kind of dismiss that.
It wasn't his move either.
Exactly. And the people on the jury would know that. There's the legacy advantage, which didn't really come to anything because Dan was removed to six.
And also it was fake. Like, why wasn't that a massive knock against him? Why was the jury so pumped up about that? Like, I'm still confused.
And, like, the others didn't know that he had those things until, like, the very, very end. So, like, I don't know. I don't think that he is, like, the exact poster child for it, but, like, I definitely take what you're saying. And, like, in this group of people, he was the one that was considered the flashiest in terms of modern Survivor. But I think that Tommy had really good social bonds. And I know that there were some questions. I don't want to kind of like jump too far ahead, but I know there were some questions about like, how does this equate to like Australian Survivor values? And I do think that one of the things that Australian Survivor, or I can only speak from my experience, and I having only played Australian Survivor is, and I'll talk only about season one, is that it is more about kind of like how people interact on the beach, and those game things aren't always looked upon as like you need the big game things to win. It's more about like how did you negotiate such a long game personally? Mm-hmm. And I know that from my experience in season one that like there were people who had sore feelings, there were people who felt dismissed, and those types of people were never going to vote for a certain type of person. So it's not about the game, the flashy game moves per se. I know it's hard. Australian Survivor, especially season one, is not the same. But from my personal experience, it's all about the social connections that you make. And that is why I think that like Tommy is a really refreshing winner and a really fun winner, because it shows that anyone can do it, even if you don't know, if you're not allowed to leave camp because you're a woman, or you don't know how to, you know, find climb trees like Ty or any of that stuff. You can still win if you put in enough grunt work face to face, person to person.
Yeah, I mean, because I, you know, looking at like the values of flashy versus social, which is what this is very broadly, I was making the broad connections to Chris versus Gavin, where I thought Gavin should have won, even like Nick Wilson versus Mike White, where I thought Mike White should have won. And then even though all are men, the people I thought should have won were very much more the beta social, you know, people controlling the game, and the other, you know, Nick won the immunities, he had an idol, Chris Underwood was Chris Underwood. But it's like, it's not a one-for-one comparison, because Chris Underwood even probably had better relationships with the jury, in effect, because he was on the jury for most of the game. So it's not just like, okay, well, Chris was really flashy and Gavin had the better relationships. So that, you know, this here is Dean was really flashy and Tommy had the better relationships, but it's not so simple because Tommy also like controlled a lot of the game. He also had like the moves that Dean didn't have. And like, yes, the social game was validated next to GOATs, which kind of takes away from it, because whatever Dean did, Nora as well, Dean and Nora were GOATs from so early on in the game, just based on like who they are as people. It's a horrible thing to say, but it is true. Like Nora is drawing dead from day one, just based on how she's making people feel and interacting with them. So for me, it doesn't hugely invalidate Tommy's game just because of the extremes that Dean went to with the mechanisms. Like if Modern Survivor is that based on flashiness, then even Dean should have been able to win, considering he had every tool in the book, like the idols, the winds, fire, every single thing, and it wasn't enough. So it's good to know that at the very least, a goat can't, you know, like someone who's been a goat who hasn't controlled the game can't take every single mechanism and still been seen above someone who controlled the game and had really good social relationships. Like, I am validated to know that at least a social game can win out over that, even though that does feel like a small victory.
I think that's a really, really important point. And it should give people a lot of hope who go out and play Survivor. Because when you're out there and, like, you know, you might see someone else get something and you're like, crap, like, I don't have that. Or, you know, like, that kind of vibe, that can be, that can really kind of, like, palpably turn people. Like, I remember in season one, I remember, was it Brooke or someone said to me that, like, I've never gotten an idol, like, I don't have a story. And it's like, and it can really kind of send people into this, like, oh, no, I'm never going to win because I don't have these glitzy trinkets. And it's like, no, it should give people confidence now that, like, just stay in your lane, and if a trinket comes your way, then you're like, then that's great, but, like, you don't need it. The other thing that I want to add to this is the discussion about a power duo kind of thing. Like, I feel like the discussion of, like, power couples has shifted over the seas, over the years, you know, Rob and Amber, and then everyone was scared of any power couples. And then it kind of, like, we got the Dom and Wendell of it all. And they're like, I'll be your Dom, you be my Wendell, you know, that kind of stuff. But I think what this has shown is that Tommy and Lauren were together. They were, like, in lockstep for a majority of the game. And I feel like that is what is the most powerful part of this game, having an ally. And I have always said, even from before I played the first time to during playing the first time and since playing the first time, like, I've always said, see how I'm being so careful not to mention everything.
Good.
But I've always said that an idol is not the most powerful thing in the game. The most powerful thing in the game is a solid ally. And I know that everyone, that's nothing new, but, like, it is true. Like, do not risk screwing an ally for the chance to get an idol, because an ally has infinitely more power than anything will. And I think that without Lauren, Tommy doesn't get it to the end, and vice versa.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, like, Dom and Wendell ruled the game and they had the idols and they had all the power. So for them, they were, like, all powerful. Tommy and Lauren, between the two of them, had an idol for 20 minutes. You know, otherwise, the only reason that they were able to run the game was for, like, they started well in Vokai, but they had really good social relationships. I think the best moves they made were pulling in people like Dean at the Merge, which is very Survivor South Africa, from the winner of the current, you know, the most recent season, that they were pulling in, like, these loners at the Merge and getting them to tell them information. And then you're at the center of this thing and you're making your circle bigger and bigger. But even more so, I think that people didn't see the pair as threatening compared to people like who had stories. And even if they were by themselves, it was like, we have to take them out because they'll win at the end, which was probably true, but it didn't mean that the game was being run on Tommy and Lauren's terms, because you have to worry about Elaine and you have to worry about Janet, and then you were, you know, worrying about, like, Kelly, who was really smart and making really good pre-emerge moves, like all these people who probably didn't have as much power in the game but were massive jury threats. So you're worrying about the jury threats, you're taking out jury threats with stories all the time, but at the same time you're allowing people who are technically vulnerable, they're not immune in the actual game, and you're allowing them to run the game because they're not as vocal or as big as a threat as someone who has, like, you know, see a money story.
Yeah, and that's why I really liked Tommy and Lauren, because, like, they realized that the most powerful thing is each other. And I think of, in David versus Goliath, like, one of the moves that I hated the most was when Gabby tried to take out Christian, simply because it'll make a good splashy thing to take out this person who's my closest ally. Like, it's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. Like, they could have done that. They could have bit the apple, but, like, they actually, like, were like, no, we have to ride or die to get to the end, because we're not going to be able to do it, like, without each other. And that is, to me, what I love watching about Survivor. I don't like pogongings and big alliances. I like one or two people or three, like a tiny little alliance that can try and get in there, and they don't turn on each other. They hold each other strong. And, like, you have to go out on a limb for people. You have to. You have to have someone out there. And I've always said this, even in season one, I just had no one who wanted to be that person for me. But I've always said that, like, there has to be someone in the game who you just won't cut until the final five. You know, like, and then people go, oh, well, if you don't get them first, they're going to get you. And it's like, yeah, well, do you know what? I'd rather take that risk and have that person with me in the future, or like then cut them just to say that I cut them. So I really enjoyed Tommy and Lauren this season. They were probably like one of the things that I enjoyed watching the most.
I don't know if it's because I'm so jaded by Modern Survivor, but like, I'm obsessed with how pedestrian Tommy's game is, in a good way. Like, what is his big flashy move? Like, he doesn't really have it. He didn't cut Lauren at 8 or at 7, you know? Like, he allowed her to go in fire, which is, like, the most harmless way to do it because he literally had no part in it, and she still got voted out.
He never had to, like, entertain the idea of getting rid of his ally. Like, he never even had to... Like, it was done, like, it can't be done in a better way. Like, he didn't even have the whole, like, you know, if I think of season 2, Australian Survivor, spoiler, skip ahead 30
it's
seconds.
Been 2.5 years.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, with All Stars, people are going back and watching it. Shannon, I'm trying.
Yeah.
you know, when Jericho knows that Luke's going home and he kind of, like, he doesn't make it happen, but he lets it happen, and you know, it's like that kind of thing. Like he didn't even have to do that. Like he literally had it taken off his hands by Nora and Dean, which is incredible.
But like he knew you don't have to be the best. Like Tommy would have been beaten by his teams, Lauren, Janet, Elaine, but they weren't there. He beat two goats. If Dan had been kept around, he would have beat Dan as well. Like that's enough. So he didn't feel the need. It's like, oh, I need a big splashy move. It's like, not if you just go to the end with people you can beat. That's actually a Boston Rob thing for someone who didn't go and hang out with Boston Rob. So I love that. I feel like I'm like now really buying into what Tommy is. It was a very social win, a very beta win, solid and unspectacular. I'm into that. You know, he didn't have the big flashy moves of some of the more recent winners, but like I'm more invigorated by it. At least it's a different style of way to play, and it's got a lot of really considered strategy behind it. You could see in Final Tribal Council like how much he'd considered who he was as a player, his place in like the overall Survivor game, and that's intelligent. You know, intelligent moves don't have to be the biggest and the flashiest. Sometimes they can just be really smart and like the right thing to do.
But this is kind of like that old adage about, like, you know, how do you win Survivor? The answer is just don't be the best or the worst.
Yeah, and
like,
he blitzed that.
He, like, absolutely blitzed that. That is just how you do it. Like, you don't be the best, you don't be the worst, and you're fine. Like, because you want some people to vote for you, and you also don't want to be the threat at the end. And I think he did really well there. I love how you're so invigorated by this.
How boring it is.
No, exactly. It's kind of like reminds, like, I don't know, like, this is probably a strange analogy, but, like, when you've got like parents who are like party animals, or like I've got friends who like their parents like let them drink, like do all these crazy things when they were teenagers. And instead of creating like crazy kids, they actually created like really like conservative children who, because like we're being, they've been all their life jammed down their throat, this kind of like big flashy way to live. And it's like, nah, I don't want to do that. I'm going to rebel against that. That's kind of like you. Like Jeff is like, you must love idols, Shannon. You must enjoy. Here's an idol nullifier. Here, fire making it for. Like, and you're like, nah, I'm going to like just enjoy, like, you know, Ethan's on winning.
But I've always been like, you know, in 35, it was like Ben found 15,000 idols and then he made fire and I was like, yawn. What was cool to me was that Devin threw and vote on Dr. Mike at the final five and, you know, and that's what saved him. So I've always loved those like little social and strategic moves way better than I have like, okay, wow, you made a fire. Like, I don't know. That's just not that interesting to me. Like, that's not why I'm watching the show. For me, I thought that Tommy's skills really came to the fore in the finale, especially like everything he'd been doing really consistently throughout the game. We saw much more prominently, I thought, like in much more extreme ways through the finale. Like we saw all of his really individual bonds come to play, but then the move to not have to go to fire. Like, yeah, he probably could have gone to fire and won against Lauren, but you never know with fire. A lot of players have said like, it could be complete luck. Like why should he put himself in that position? So he tells Nora that he can't make fire. She believes him. So he's manipulated her really, really well there. Then he teaches Dean to make fire. Like he was talking in his exit interview with Rob, like the psychological warfare that he would go to Lauren and be like, Dean is doing really well right now. And then she would cry instead of practice. Like that's amazing. Like that's a lot of psychological warfare there. So for me, I've always been more impressed with the moves of Natalie Anderson, of Tony, of people being taken to the end when they shouldn't, because that's purely psychological rather than winning their way there. Because to me, like that's just much less interesting. It's just much more of a sport than it is a psychological game.
Definitely. And that's why you're a Survivor super fan and not a casual fan. And that is the difference.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I really like that. I saw a lot of Tommy's game. I thought he was like much easier to root for in the finale than throughout the season. Not that I didn't like him, but like the color blindness, I reached out to him. Like, you know, like it made me connect with him. It was endearing that he like couldn't do this very cool like thing, or it was a detriment to him that he was colorblind. That was interesting. Like, I was just rooting for him more in the finale, especially once he didn't even have to make fire, than I was throughout the season. So like, I ended up being pumped up.
See, I wasn't rooting for him.
Who were you rooting for?
I was rooting for Nora.
Yeah, but you know, it's never gonna happen.
I know it's never gonna happen, and that's why I wanted it to happen, because like I thought this season has been a bit of a mess, and what better way to cap it off than with this like super unique, like really like, I find her so endearing. Like when she's on my screen, I like audibly laugh and like smile. Whereas I don't get that with anyone else. Obviously we all love Janet. Like, you know, we get that, but like, I love Nora. Like,
no.
I think, no, I'm sorry. I think she is absolutely hilarious. And for the same reason that you are pushing against the big flashy players, I think I'm pushing against the strategy of it all, in the fact that unless there was someone who was like clearly like this strategic genius, like I believe that the best strategic players this season were someone like Kelly, and I would even put Missy in that conversation as well. When those, to me, obvious strategic people who I'm rooting for are gone, then I want the person who is the most interesting. I want the person who is going to be like, who's going to remind me of what I always think about Survivor, that anyone can win if you in the right circumstances. And I was just kind of like rooting for Nora to be like, you know what? You made it work. Like, you don't have the tools of how to play Survivor. You really don't. You've never seen Survivor. She admits that herself. And that's why I kind of like wanted her to win, because she was like figuring it out as she went along and was just doing it her way. And I know that's not a Survivor super fan answer, but maybe that's just me pushing back against the fact that it's 40 seasons. Like, give me something fresh.
Yeah, I do love Nora. Obviously, she's hilarious. I've put that clip on Twitter of her telling Dean how he's going to make fire, but being like, Dean, your game is so hot right now. You're on fire. Literally, you will be on fire. That's what's happening tonight. Like, what a way to tell him that, like, incredibly important piece of news. She's an amazing character. But I didn't ever obviously even consider the possibility that she could win. And I don't think I would have liked it. The thing is, like, what would that narrative have been? I would have been very, I mean, obviously would have been told very differently to us. It would have been a completely different reality where Nora could win. That's exactly the truth. So it's hard to even consider. But I would have been so confused about what to take away from the season. Now it's like wrapped up in a neat little package. Like, strategically, I get it. It's about how there were so many idols on Island of the Idols that idols became irrelevant and the social game finally won out. Like, very, very neat sentence to tie up this in a way that I can understand and appreciate. A Nora win would have been like, What is the saying? Like, yes, anyone can win, and you voted for Christy, but like, when you voted for Christy, I could wrap that package up in a neat little package. Like, you know, like, I could wrap that season up. It was saying, you know, mateship loses. Done. What would Nora winning have said? It would have just said, make people disrespect you by the way you act. You can be like this really kooky character who speaks to Lauren the way she was in this finale, who speaks to Karishma the way she did a couple of weeks ago, and have people reward that because you're like different. Why? Like, what is that?
The message that the takeaway would have been is that when the game is so destabilized by an incredibly insane amount of idols,
nothing makes sense anymore, has meaning, and Nora might as well win.
Exactly.
But that's not true, because there is still meaning.
It is true, because anyone can win Survivor. Like, that is the message that we would have taken away from that. And I think that that is completely fitting for where we are in American Survivor history at this point, where they are going far too out on the limb with interfering with the game, and they are pushing it to this point of almost ridiculousness. And what do we reward? What do we deserve?
It would have been a protest vote.
we deserve a Nora win, because that's what we've earned. But that is what Survivor gods have sown, and then that's what they're going to reap. They're going to reap someone like Nora winning. And I would smugly take that and go, see what happens. You are undercutting your own franchise by allowing things like this to happen. But it didn't happen, so the conversation's, you know, irrelevant. But that's what I would have taken away from it.
Look, in a different world where Dan isn't removed, does Tommy go at fire? Does Lauren go at five? And are we sitting there with Dan, Dean, and Nora? In which case, Dean probably wins, which is probably, like, you know, almost as ridiculous. I mean, I still think that it would have been the narrative of, like, flashy game wins, but he was also a goat. And that would have been, like, look to the point that you've undercut your own franchise where, like, literally nothing has meaning anymore. I think that I still see the message of, you put in so many idols and advantages that they lost all meaning and the social game has relevance again. Like, that to me is Nisha. But I guess the only way you can accept a Nora win is, like, this is ridiculous. Like, you know, the show has reached the point of ridiculousness where Nora could win. If that's the way you want to look at it, I guess that could have been satisfying. But, like, I feel much more satisfied by this, especially in, like, direct counter to Edge of Extinction, which made me feel so deflated as a fan, which made me feel that I don't understand the show and the show doesn't understand me and we had a real disconnect in our relationship. And it's now like, I get this and my way of loving the game can have value again. So that's important to me.
See, it's funny, right? Like, I feel like the show has brought you back from the brink.
Yeah,
where it's
definitely.
Like, where I feel like it just kind of tipped me. It's tipped me over the edge.
Yeah, it's been hard. And like, we'll talk about season 40 and some of that, like, there's a lot we have to contend with in Modern Survivor. I wanted to talk about all of this in regards to gender, because that's been like a big thing to be spoken about. To have five male winners, it's the longest streak of, you know, one gender winning. And we've got a lot of questions like, will a woman ever win again? Like, that's another thing that makes me feel really invigorated about the season, was that, like, even though we got a male winner again, he's such a different winner. He's like the polar opposite winner to Chris Underwood.
Yes.
And he's very different to a lot of the recent winners as well. So I now feel, again, reinvigorated by the game, because it's like, okay, so different play styles can win. I didn't know that that was true a few months ago. I thought it was so homogenized that maybe only one type of player was going to win, a very alpha type of player.
Yeah.
Now that I know a beta and social player to his absolute extreme, one of the only people who didn't go to Robin Sandra, someone who didn't have idols, but every person had idols. Like, the fact that it's so extreme and that he won from the GOAT spot shows me that, you know, a different type of player can win. So
yeah,
now
like
I feel
I
like it could be a woman. Yeah, but and I didn't know if that was true a few months ago anymore.
Yeah.
And
no,
now I do feel like that is true, except maybe Nora. But I think that, like, different types of play styles can win. So I feel like if a different type of game can be rewarded, then different people can win. That's really, really... That's been great for me. Like, I've enjoyed the way that gender has been played with in the season, other than, like, obviously the awful things. But, like, the fact that Lauren and Janet and Elaine were all taken out for being massive threats, fire threats, jury threats, like, these more alpha players than a Tommy, and that they would have beaten Tommy, that makes me feel pumped up about it, even though a woman didn't actually win the season.
And I think that what we have here is, and in the discussion of gender, I feel dovetails with the discussion of... not like who would return, but like who were the shining stars of the season. And they are all women. Like, yep, Tommy, you're great. But like, they are all women. The characters that absolutely crushed it. And I don't even think it's an editing thing. Like, you can see the raw talent as a reality TV character and as a person and as a narrator. You can see it there with Janet, Elaine, Karishma, Kelly, Missy. Who am I missing here? Nora. Like, these are just like...
Kelly.
These are like...
You say Kelly?
Yeah, I said Kelly. Yeah.
Okay. Kelly again.
Yeah, Kelly again. Yeah. Like, these are like...
Chelsea. All, she was great.
Yeah, she was good too. Yeah, like, even, you know, and those, all they all had potential as well. But, like, I just look at these women and they're like, these are... I would watch this again. Like, I would watch all of those women again. Like, and I don't think it's the show going, let's give them all really good edits and let's like make them all look, you know, have very compelling storylines, or not good edits, but like let's give them all compelling content, because I just think that they have super compelling people. And I love that, because I have not come out of a season like I believe that the top 7 or 8 characters from the season were all women. And like, can you name a season, Survivor season, where that has ever happened before?
Micronesia probably. But like, but the thing is like, this
no,
was,
Eric was hilarious. Like,
yeah. Okay, so it was pretty accurate from the preseason that these women were going to be amazing. And I think some people feel let down in the season in that obviously it was like, it completely dismissed women with all the Dan stuff, and that's completely fair. The fact that so many of these women have kind of fallen prey to the scandal is particularly sad. Like, for it to happen to any season is sad, but for it to happen to a season where we were so pumped up about the female cast in particular is really, really devastating.
Yeah.
And then to have another man win the fifth in a row, the longest streak ever, I think I can see how that's a letdown too. Like, people wanted it to be, could Jana get to the end? Could Karishma get to the end? You know, Lauren, Elaine, all these like really big threatening women at different times, could they win the game? And it ended up being Tommy, who again was like, again, amazing to me in his boringness, but was pretty boring. And is like another male winner of the same age, like it's the exact same demographic. But yeah. I love the way that women played with gender in this season. They were the threats. They found all the idols. Like, yes, let the women be taken out, not for being liabilities, but for being threats. Even the fact that, like, Molly and Chelsea were taken out early because they were these huge threats. They were starting fires on day one.
Yep.
That excites me. I do want to see a woman win. But again, to have a social beta game playstyle win, to have women be the alpha players who are taken out for being alpha, that's really fun to me. I'd love to see a beta woman win, and I'd love to see an alpha woman win. I want to see all of those things. But in trying to, like, look at the positives of the season, I do think there are positives there.
Yes, absolutely. And I would love to see, and I guess we could talk about it now, like, who do you think will return? If you had to pick just two names. No, I won't say who do you think will.
Who would I want? Let's
just say, if you had to pick two names of people that you would want to see play Survivor again, whether it's in a year, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. Name the two.
That's two is really why have we decided on two?
Because I want you to really think about it.
I'd love to see Karishma in a different set of circumstances, because I think she was the most changed by her circumstances. I'd love to give someone like Kelly. I don't think it'll happen. Maybe from her perspective and the show's perspective, but like, I'd love to see her have a game that's not tainted by this that she deserves. Hard to go past Janet and Elaine. Why did you give me two? I'm not doing two. This is my show. I tell you, we're doing 10.
No.
Well, who are your two?
Okay, so I very similar thought process to you in the fact that, like, Kelly would be in there, but I just don't think it's going to happen. Janet is great, but I do believe we've seen Janet now. Like, and I know that's, you know,
I can agree with that.
About Janet, and like, I'm a Stanet, but like, we've seen it. Now, I want to see Karishma play again.
Yeah.
100%. Like, and I can tell that she would have been so frustrating to play with in strategically around the camp, all that. But I loved it. I loved it. I loved Karishma. Like, I was rooting for her and for Nora, and they're the two people from this entire season that I want to see play again.
I feel like I've seen Nora. Like, I get it. Because I worry that Nora could do the coach thing of knowing what worked entertainment-wise and then, like, compounding that, or is she that just that genuine that she wouldn't do that?
No, I think she would do that, but I do think that she would know also how to play Survivor as well on top of that. Like I said, I feel like she was figuring it out. I don't know. I'm just, like, I'm so enthralled by watching those two women play Survivor and play it badly, like, socially. But, like, I'm like you said, it's the word of the podcast. I am, like, invigorated by that. Like, I want to see Karishma play again, knowing now that what she knows, and I want to see Nora playing again, knowing what the hell Survivor actually is.
I feel happy that invigorated is the word of the podcast, because, like, literally after the finale, I couldn't sleep at 4 a.m. because I was so excited that someone could win from the goat spot, and I was like, this is a sad state of who I am. So I'm glad we're just, like, going with that. But while we're talking about Nora and gender and all of that, I think something interesting that's come up online is that this is the fourth season in a row to have the final three makeup be very, very similar. It's two men who are the contenders and one woman who's going to get zero votes and not even be an option. Yeah. And there's been a lot of two men and one woman makeups, you know, in the last several years, but those four seasons in particular have had it where the woman's never going to get any votes. And, like, I don't disagree. I don't think Laurel, Julie, you know, Nora, Angelina should have been winning the game. But I do think it's interesting because it leaves us with the fact that maybe the male threats can get through. The female threats, I don't think this season, but maybe in the past, have been kind of blocked out of the game based on the mechanisms of the game. And what you're left with is, like, male contenders and a female goat. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I did. And I've seen that online. And it's kind of crazy that it's kind of repeating itself in that respect. I look at those women though, and while I agree that they probably weren't the winners of each of those seasons, like, if I was on the jury, given the information I was presented, like, it's a shame though that, like, someone like Laurel, who I was a huge Laurel fan, like, huge. Like, she was probably, like, I believe, one of the stronger of those women in the losing spots. Like, she just happened to be going up against, like, two of the most dominant players ever. Where, like, yeah. you couldn't even, like, not even Donathan could figure out a way to vote for Laurel. Like, so it's a shame, but, like, it's not always that they're just goats or terrible or, like, zany or whatever. Like, there is some good players there. It's just that it just is just the way it's happening. The threats are getting picked off.
But the female threats in particular. At this season, I think all threats were being picked off, but the threats were mainly female, which is great. Last season, I think you had a lot of really great contenders. And also in David versus Goliath, you had your Karas, you had your Allisons, you had your Victorias, your Laurens. You know, you had these female characters who were boxed out by the more outplay mechanisms of the game, even if it's just Nick winning immunity, you know, several times in a row, or last season, Chris Underwood using every mechanism in the game and Rick Devens as well at points to take out those women. And then the male threats get through and female threats are being picked off. So the woman you're left with is someone you wouldn't necessarily vote for. So in this season, I don't think it was so mechanism based, but it still was kind of within that vein. I'm not sure if there's like a real trend coming out of it. Maybe we need more of a sample size, but it definitely is really interesting that four seasons in a row can have the same makeup of that final tribal council.
Yeah, and I think that you could put Victoria in like the Laurens spot where it's like kind of like someone who like I believe Victoria would have won.
Yeah.
Like, and like they're just falling short. Like how do we it's not our job to make sure it happens, but like
I kind of feel like it is at this point. Like everything's on our backs right now.
It's Tyler Perry's job. He's the only one who's got the direct phone line. How do we get that to convert? And is it a returnee thing? Like women that have already proven themselves, like in society's eyes or the show's eyes, like, you know, Sarah or Parvati or Sandra, like, you know, these are people that have kind of like run the gauntlet already and come out the other end that people feel comfortable giving it to them. I'm not sure. I don't know the answer, but I'm hopeful that for season 40, there's a very strong field of women there and a very strong field of men that should mean that the women don't stand out as much as they did in this season, but that they would all still be viable contenders.
Yeah, we'll talk about season 40 because that's got a lot of the really modern mechanisms that often advantage men and alpha players, and then it also, like, returning seasons tend to kind of be good for women, so that has a lot of really clashing elements to it. I don't have any neat answers for this. I don't really have any neat trends. It's something interesting to think about, and I think the important thing is to talk about it and think about it when these things come up. Something that shocked me was in reading Jeff's interview with Dalton Ross, and Dalton said, like, you know, what is your take on the fact that we've had five male winners, the longest streak of one gender winning the game? And Jeff was like, I've never thought of that.
Yeah.
And that's disheartening to me. Like, that's deflating to me because Jeff's the whole time been talking, we're going to put in more idols, we don't care what you think. And it's like, at least know your show. Like, even if there's no neat answers, just be critically thinking about your show. Not saying even to change anything or anything like that, but like, how can you be producing a show that you're not thinking about even 1/1000th of what the fans are that there's been five men in a row to win? Just literally, like, people have said you have to compile a list of winners. How are you not looking at the makeup of the recent winners?
No, I think that he is very aware of it. I think he's doing the whole, like, I don't think that he was aware of, like, what Missy pointed out, that, you know, two African Americans had won the immunity, and he was like, oh, like, I just don't see color and all that kind of
thing.
I think that he was actually aware in this situation that women are not winning, and I think that him admitting that would be an admission that the show, in a very contentious season around gender, would be an admission that there is a problem with the show. Like, and I just don't think that he's ever going to do that. So, especially at this point in Survivor history. So there is no way he is not aware of it because he's a very, very smart man.
I'm not so sure.
Like, I think he's lying.
I just don't feel that he's thinking about it at the level that some of the community are thinking about it. Like, the show is slightly off its axis, largely off its axis due to all the things that have been put into the game. And is Jeff Probst thinking about it like that? Like, I'm not so sure anymore. I'm not so sure in 2020 if Jeff is thinking that much about it. Like, I was talking about this with my brother/intern, and we were saying that, like, we don't feel the show is thinking enough about things, so they feel validated in, like, the flashiness, basically. Like, for example, like, we'll talk about the nullifier, but the fact that the nullifier presented such a satisfying moment in David versus Goliath, the show, is it unpacking it to like, okay, well, why did that work? Or is it like, yes, work, take, we'll put it in again? I'm not so sure. I mean, it's one of the rare occasions where I hope Jeff Probst was lying and has realized that there have been five male winners in the months that he has had to do so. I would hope so, because you can't make any changes. You can't produce a show if you're not thinking at the bare minimum about where your show is contextually, like right now in TV and in life. Like, you have to be thinking about it.
I'll give my experience, my very generalized experience, and that is that through my relationship with Australian Survivor over the last however many years it's been, they are acutely aware of what the fans are thinking. They are acutely aware of what the general audience is thinking, and how, and they are acutely aware of attempting to, you know, reconcile those two competing factors. And I know that there are decisions that are made based on what is going on out there in fan communities. And you know from your discussions with LaRue and that like...
Oh, LaRue's his own kettle. Like, LaRue is listening, I don't think that Jeff is LaRue.
But even if Jeff isn't, like, it is a big production team and there are lots of super fans who work on these shows. Believe me, I've worked with some of them who have worked on American Survivor, and, like, things like this are discussed. Things like this are known. And the fact that they are known and nothing is done about it is the actual problem. So I'm going to give Jeff a fail on that one and say that he was lying and he just wants to maybe put his head in the sand a little bit.
I would hope so, because, like, to me, it's just,
I'm so jaded on this podcast.
I don't want to be, because I was invigorated. Like, you know, I'm invigorated, but, like, in terms of the state of Modern Survivor, like, for Jeff to stand up at the Edge of Extinction finale where I was so angry, Nick.
I know you were.
I know. And to say... We love the idols. We don't care what you think. You know, like, he said this apparently in the ad breaks. He was like, we're going to keep putting idols in. It was like such a slap in the face. It was like, we don't just not like so many idols because it's like getting boring. It's also like, how is it disadvantaging women? Like, how is it working to like the context of the game from like all these societal values? And like, if you really cared about that or were listening to it, you wouldn't say something so egregious. So you must not be listening to it. So then to follow it up with like, and I haven't even noticed, like, it actually tracks for me. And yeah, I'm going to go with you that it's lying, because it'll make me sleep better on my honeymoon tomorrow. But like, I, for me, it tracks that Jeff Probst has not thought about it. I would not be shocked. I wasn't shocked to read it. I was just very angry. Should we get back to not being angry? It's not good podcasting to be like so jaded about this.
What I've said about Australian Survivor should make people happy, because because I do believe that there are people who are thinking about it. Maybe not Jeff, but like, yeah, it's out there.
As long as they have one intern who's like, Jeff, the people are mad. Let me tell you why. The job to just like tell Jeff what is wrong. I want that job. I feel like I'm like on my resume. That's like the perfect job for me. I'll just come to Jeff and be like, Jeff, here's a 5-minute briefing today on why the fans are angry. That's a really relevant position, and I, you know, they know where to find me, and I'll be taking requests. Okay, well, while we're so jaded, let's talk about this season overall. We'll leave out the Dan stuff because we'll talk about that a little later if we can. Not that they're not like completely tangled in each other, but what did you think, kind of like looking at the season overall, like some high points, some low points? Where will it kind of rank for you?
Look, it will rank pretty low. The only thing that I believe is the bright spark are these very new, unique characters, these female characters. That's the thing that will be the bright spark. Like, in terms of gameplay, the highlight for me was Kelly sitting in that confessional and having a brainwave.
Yes.
And them showing it. Like, These are the positives that I'll remember. I will remember the strong female characters. I will remember Kelly sitting in that confessional. And I will remember just like Nora's like insane laugh at Tribal Council. Like, those are the three fun, like, iconic things that I will just take with me. And it's strange that like Karishma's idol play isn't one of them, and like Island of the Idols, like Sandra, I love, you know, I'm a huge Sandra fan.
Sandra,
like,
yeah,
I'm a Sandra. Like, those things won't actually stick in my mind. It's those other moments. The Kelly thing in the confessional, as a Survivor player, I love that, because there are so many times where things like that not happen, is in like pulling off these amazing things, but like, there are moments where you're sitting there and you're like, okay, well, this will never get shown, and then no one will ever understand the reality of like this thought process, and it'll just become this like packaged experience. Like, I love that because it gave an insight. Like, my wife, like, who obviously has never played Survivor but knows intimately the details of me playing Survivor, even she was like, wow, is that what it's like? Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love moments like that that allow the audience in, because it makes it really easy to kind of convey the emotion and the feeling of actually like working through complex, complex strategy in a short period of time, where you're taking every opportunity and your mind never stops running. That to me was like the best moment of the whole season.
I'm so glad you're saying that, because we did get a question. I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but we did have a question of like, what will we look back as like the thing you remember about the season? And like, it will be the Dan thing, but like, to try and put that to the side, that was my moment that I was thinking of, you know, like Kelly in her confessional and the idol play that came from it. Like, that episode to me was the highlight of the season. Like, that was really, really fun. The pre-merge was really fun. Like, honestly, like, what a fun pre-merge before all the Dan stuff happened, where it really just all became part of the same thing. But that was really fun. The cast was so fun. And then, as I said, it like became a bit of a boring pogonging in and of itself. And that might have been me being a bit disconnected from the show. But I was like, what are the power dynamics right now? Like, aside from knowing that Lauren and Tommy were running the game, it was like, it was all just kind of just like big, massive people. And they were like kind of picking off like the Elaines and the threats and Karishma, and she's not part of it. Like, it didn't feel very well defined to me. I really liked the episode that I did the know-it-alls on like the double tribal council. But then it kind of came back from that into a pretty vague place, I thought, and the hierarchy was a bit vague. So I feel like it kind of limped to the finish. As you said, Tommy's winner edit, so telegraphed from basically the very beginning, which is sad. You know, like when it happened with Michelle and stuff, like, you know, I know that we're a small subsection of the fang community who know, can read the edit and like know this was going to happen. But like, it was unfortunate that it was so obvious that Tommy was going to win. And I want to talk about Island of the Idols. Because I didn't realize I was so negative about all of this stuff. I don't want to be, but like, did it fall a bit flat? Like, I feel like that, again, like loving Boston Rob and Sandra and them being funny and fun, it was reduced, I feel, to a gimmick. And having just watched Island of Secrets in Survivor South Africa, like, one thing you can say about that season is that Island of Secrets was used so well. And it wasn't just that you would get advantages there or whatever you would get there. Like, the island itself had a presence in the game, like such a big presence. People were voted out for lying bet poorly about it. The winner ended up mastering Island of Secrets better than anyone else, which was like the final argument and final tribal council. So it was so core to the season, the island itself. Whereas this Island of the Idols, I feel like you might lose a vote, you might get an advantage, you might, you know, get an idol, and those things might have some impact. But the island itself, we never saw anyone talk about it, probably to kind of keep the mystery of Rob and Sandra. So even if they were having those conversations, we weren't going to see it. We never really saw, besides really Vince, people kind of suffer for having gone there. I mean, Jamal was a big one, but he was, you know, on the outs anyway. So like, then they started kind of skipping episodes where it was part of it. It was weird how they kind of all just went to live on Island of the Idols, and Rob and Sandra just left, didn't even go to final tribal council, even in the box. It was like, what has happened to this island? It's really been affirmed as a gimmick and not as a theme, as a central core theme to the season. And I think the fact that, you know, whereby the winner of Island of Secrets mastered it and therefore kind of affirmed the theme, and that it was like affirmed in the winning game, Tommy did the opposite. As being one of the only people to not go, he undermined the theme entirely, and that it really wasn't essential to the entire season. And I think that that is what it deserves. Like, that is what it became.
Yeah, but isn't that a good thing? Like,
because I like that too.
Yeah, at the beginning of the season, I feel like, you know, the prevailing thought was, here we go. This is going to be the Rob and Sandra show. This is going to like completely upend the entire season. They're going to end up coming into the game at one point, or they're going to get a vote at Final Tribal. And like, I must applaud the show for showing some restraint with Island of the Idols. And obviously there was times where they were like, I don't know, you've said, with going to Island of the Idols was like basically like the death knell for your game. But
it didn't pan out hugely that way. It was more like at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were episodes where like, they just didn't do it. And like, bravo for the show in doing that. Like, obviously there are things that they could tweak about it, I believe. Like, I think that there was that there's cooler mechanisms and things they could have done. I was expecting there to be like one episode where two people were going to go to the Island of the Idols.
Yes.
Like I thought that was cool. I hated the pulling the name out of the bag thing, which leaves it so questionable for us as to who went and when. I hate all that. But I must applaud them for not making it this kind of like just this saturation. And there was really cool, like everyone sometimes you're like, oh, we're getting like a 1 minute check-in with Sandra and Rob. Like, and then, you know, in a couple of episodes, we might get another 1 minute check-in. Like it was never, I wouldn't have felt as a contestant, I wouldn't have felt like Rob and Sandra stole the limelight, because I don't think they did. And I think that they had huge potential to do that.
I still think that if you're going to do a theme, like do the theme well enough that it's a central premise of the season. You know, you don't want Rob and Sandra to be, you know, to be really, you know, overriding the contestants. But in Island of Secrets, it was good that Island of Secrets was every episode, like such an intriguing part of the episode because people had to come back and lie. My brother / intern Jason had the best line that he told me. He said, Jamal came back with a blank piece of parchment. In Island of Secrets, every episode someone had a blank parchment because it was so vague and so dynamic that you could say and write and do whatever you wanted with your time there, which was just brilliant. I had to credit him there. But like, you want Island of the Idols to be something if they're going to make it something. Like, if you don't want it to overshadow it and just be like this little side piece, just don't do it at all. If you're going to do it, do it well. Have them choose who's going there. Have that be a debate. Have that be a vote. Have them talk about Rob and Sandra being there. I want to see those conversations. Clearly, Tommy was not surprised when he arrived in the finale. Show me Lauren telling Tommy. That sounds like an insane conversation to have on the beach, you know? Like, don't pull names out of a bag. You know, have it be more dynamic. Have it be more interesting. I just think that there was so much secrecy around it. There were so many confusing things. Even the fact that, like, no one went there again. Why? Yeah, let's see how people can build on that. Were they taking names out of the bag? Like, I have to ask. It seems unprecedented and impossible mathematically.
Impossible.
That they impossible. No one went twice.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible. And I feel like there was way more they could have done with it. But, like, again, if they didn't, that means that there was more time for the actual gameplay. And then we would have been complaining like, oh, like you messed with the structure of the game too much. Like, I thought there was going to be a moment where you could bring Sandra or Rob to back to camp as like a advisor, like an on-the-spot advisor, like that kind of like shadowed you or kind of like was like, I thought they were going to be like set up in a booth down the beach and you could like go and you could scramble and then you could run it back and go, okay, this is what I'm thinking. What should I say? Like, I thought it was going to be way more like Sandra and Rob, like, pulling the strings of the season. I believe that you could have done it without Sandra. Like,
yeah, well, I don't know why Sandra was so reduced to like the beta player of Island of the Idols. I'm still confused about that. Robert, every single like flu read, why?
I think that I feel like maybe she would have been happy to do that. Like,
that's just cashing her check. Like, that's the Sandra way. But like, I still think with the island, like, it's not that it should have overshadowed the players, because that's a bad twist too. Again, like Island of Secrets, it should have been a mechanism that the players could use to their advantage. How are you going to lie about it? How are you going to do that? How does it affect the game, like, from a player's perspective? And there's more that they, I think, could have done with that if they'd made more strategic decisions. Literally just like never pick a name out of a bag is like one very easy fix. And there are others to make it player led and to make it like a really core part of the season. Like, I feel like they were undermining Island of the Idols every step of the way. The fact that they kept showing Rob and Sandra be incorrect about like their tribal takes. And one of them was like, a woman's definitely going to win. And we like clung to that. And then a woman didn't win. It's like, why do they keep undercutting Rob and Sandra? And like, even at the end, I thought that they could have really use them. I thought the final five could have come to Island of the Idols, and this is a little messy, but maybe like they come there and they have alone time with Rob and Sandra, and they get to ask one question. So they have to try and identify where they are in the game. So you can say, Rob and Sandra, I think I'm going to make fire. Teach me fire. Rob and Sandra, I think I'm in trouble the next vote. What is the immunity challenge? I need to know what the immunity challenge is. Or like, I think I'm getting to the end, but I need help with the jury. Then you can identify one thing you think your game needs and like, how well are you aware of your own place in the game, and get a little bit of help equally from Rob and Sandra. Like, you think they could have done that rather than just being like, here are some buffs, like, bye. Like, it was a very weird way to end this whole thing. It kind of like ended on a bit of a nothing note.
I love that idea. I think that's a really good idea. It puts way too much control in Rob and Sandra's hands, and I feel like they were very produced by the show. So
imagine, more player involvement. If the players could come as voted and just be like, what lesson, like, I think, I don't know where I heard this, I've consumed so much content so recently, but like, I think it was a Christian who said, let them come to Island of the Idols and have three lessons to choose from. Then it's at least them saying, this is what I think I need in the game. Like, again, just that, like, them being able to make that decision and them being able to identify what they need, I think would just make it more interesting and more about the players and make the island more impactful, but not detract from the players in doing so.
Yeah, another great idea.
But I didn't come up with it and I cannot credit who did. So I am sorry about that. Final tribal council I wanted to talk about a little bit as well. We've kind of talked about the battle of values and stuff. Let's talk about Dean a little. We've barely spoken about Dean, who had like such a massive episode, a massive couple of episodes to come from where he did. What did you think of like Dean's game to end here?
Could you imagine like the way he would have been feeling going into that final, what was it? Five, when he had all the bling. I think he would have been able to taste it. I think he thought that he could just taste the win. Because, you know, ostensibly he's done what you should do, which is like you lay pretty low, you know, like you don't like, you know, you don't stand out in front and then you make a late surge. Like, you know, this kind of like reminds me of like Lisa from Survivor New Zealand. It's like, you know, don't do anything too flashy, be in the mix, be liked, have a move or two, and then just
liked? I think that might be the issue. That's where the plan
is. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but I just feel like in his mind, he probably thought he was liked.
You know, and then like, he didn't have any relationships. Like, he couldn't go back and make relationships with, like, Karishma and Janet. He just hadn't done that. So, like, you can't get that back.
Yeah. Well, I just felt like he would have thought that he was like, oh, my God, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, I can do this. I enjoyed watching him in some ways, but I also felt like, oh, really? Like, you're taking a spot from all these awesome players that we've just lost, like, and you're the one that's ending up. I would feel shortchanged if I was someone else who was on the cast.
I do kind of like, I think I love Dean now. Like, I think like through the finale, like, he's a puppy dog and we must protect him, don't you think?
Yeah.
Oh, just like Kelly said, she doesn't get him. Like, I get him. Like, I mean, I get that he's an enigma, so I guess I don't get him, but like, he's just a positive spirit. Like, he's just not thinking about it as much as we are. Like, you know, the fact that he could get so tied up at the tribal council and kind of contradict himself, like, that's where Tommy was coming in, just like way more considered. But he kind of sat there and he like had these trinkets. You know, you would think there was a little bit more he could have done with the idol at final five, even just to play it on Tommy and assert some dominance, or to play it on Nora and kind of get some loyalty. They've talked about this on Know It Alls, but just to do something, because
That is crazy to me that you wouldn't play it.
Yeah, because you reveal it at final tribal council and it's like way too late. We had this in Survivor New Zealand when Dave did it, and everyone was like, he had his own thing, but it was like, it's too late for this now. Like, it's not going to impact us now. You need to tell us 2 days ago.
Exactly. And do you know why? Because, that people talk at Jury Villa, even though you're not supposed to, and you want that message out there. You want to get the messaging, give them time to ruminate on it, give them time to, you know, sit down at Jury Villa over a couple of drinks and have that discussion, you know, pulling it out at the last minute. Like, obviously, kind of like, I guess the only benefit is that it lowers your threat level so that you get to the next step, but like, so you actually get to Final Tribal Council, but like, that's not big enough of a factor, I think, than to pull it out at Final Tribal. Like, because to me, if someone pulls out an idol and says, hey, I didn't even need to use this, I would say, well, you didn't think of a creative way to use it. Don't you think?
Yeah, and there's not a ton he could have done with it, but there's still something. Like, he's gonna go to, you know, the end with Tommy probably. So it's like, yeah, play the idol on Tommy and just be like, I was so much the idol guy that like I was just throwing out idols to Tommy. It's like, he didn't have it, so I was protecting him. Like, I'm the alpha, you know.
Exactly. You can potentially mitigate any thought that you were the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it to leverage, hey Nora, like I'll save you right now. I've heard your name floating around. I will save you now if you
just
make
in case. And Nora would respond to that.
Yes. I'll make a promise right now that if you get to choose, you take me and you're promising in front of the jury.
Well, Wendell did this with Laurel, right? And I know that she probably would have voted for him anyway, but it's like, it's just by a little bit of goodwill rather than just not even revealing it, not even like wearing it with your immunity necklace. Like, he had a lot and you have to kind of like, I think, get every inch, especially Dean, who's making such a late run. You better get every single bit of power that you can out of these mechanisms. Like, you need it, you know?
Like Chris Underwood, like, you've got to like,
Anyway.
Well, it's true though. You have to, like, if you're going to rely on like 5 days worth of stuff,
to make
your survivor game, make those 5 days count.
It's true. And he won fire and everything, like he did it. For me, like, I thought he was really good in this episode beyond just finding things, as Tommy would say. Because I really like, the strategic acumen and, like, the awareness he was bringing that, like, I didn't know was there. We were all laughing when he was, like, all the goats are teaming up and didn't include himself in that. But he did have a confessional where he was like, I was a goat, and now I'm, like, making a late run. I was like, that is very insightful. And he kept, you know, I love that he took Nora on the reward. Again, she's someone who would respond to that. I thought that was really smart. I thought he was going to take Tommy and leave the girls, but he made the right move, I think, in taking Nora, even if it didn't really pan out. And the fact that he was, like, very conscious of making multiple final twos, I don't think is, like, highly verbalized in, like, the fire-making era, where it's, like, it's not a final three, it really is a final two. He's going to Tommy for a final two, he's going to Nora for a final two. Again, it didn't pan out, but at least he was, like, thinking on that level. So I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, I agree. That was cool. I really like the final tribal council. I love the back and forth. I thought there was, like, lots of people talking over the top of each other, like not in a confusing way, but, like, it felt like this living, breathing thing that I wanted to get a front row seat for. And I feel like they gave us the best bits, but I also feel like there was some other good stuff that they would have had to cut out. So I enjoyed the final tribal council.
And I think where Tommy stood really tall, other than like being super tall, was that he could like define his game so well in really accurate ways and took it to its extremes and to be like, I was a social player, that's my thing. Like he even said in exit interviews, it's like, he was looking for idols, right? Like, he just didn't find it. But once he didn't find it, he made that his game. I didn't need idols. I didn't even want idols, you know? Like, and he did obviously, you know, not win any challenges, and he says he was sandbagging until final eight. But it's just like, I never wanted to win challenges. Like, go to that extreme to define your game and give something that, like, the jurors can really hold on to.
Yeah, that's a lot of kind of like, all right, I didn't do it. What's the next best thing? Pretend I didn't want them.
But, like do it. Good. Like, yeah, make it more positive.
For sure. That's what you have to do.
Because I feel like Dean and Nora couldn't describe their game as well. Like, for Dean, he obviously hadn't thought about the ethical line, which people didn't like, and then he got tripped up. And then the legacy advantage moment was, like, so heartbreakingly cringe to me that he was like, I have this legacy advantage. Is it real? And Jamal was like, no. But because Jamal is the kindest person in the world, he responded with so much kindness to be like, but Dean is saying he didn't even need it. And Dean's like, yeah, I had these advantages, but I didn't need them, which is getting confusing because that's not like a Tommy game, which Tommy did better. So, like, I don't think Dean really knew where he was going with his game. Like, hadn't really thought about it as much, obviously, as Tommy did of, like, what he was trying to sell to the jury.
Can I just talk from my experience about, like, being on the jury? So in season one, like, we had – this is not final tribal council, but in, you know, the final four, and we have – you know, Christy's saying, oh, well, I guess I'm just going to win the final challenge. And like, we all like audibly groaned. There's like a gif of it where I like collapse. Like, it, you know, and I feel like it was too much. We were trying to get the message out there to her and to everyone out there that like, hey, like do something different, guys. This is shit. Oh, sorry. This is not good. But, I feel like I didn't, as a viewer, when I watched that back, what we did, I was like, no, that's probably a bit too much. And that was reaffirmed when they all kind of like started groaning and shutting down Nora when she said that thing. And it's just like, I feel like it can really rattle someone. Obviously it didn't rattle Christy, it rattled her into winning. But in that instance, like, I feel like, I wonder if that just kind of took the wind out of Nora's sails. And I don't know how much wind she had there in the first place, but in her mind, I think she had some. And I don't know, I feel like how you talk about Jamal responding with kindness and that should be the way that the jury's done. And I feel like that was probably the one bit of the tribal council that I didn't like.
Yeah, I completely agree.
What I did like was that Jack and whoever else were not afraid to contradict someone else on the jury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Aaron was saying, like, don't undercut Dean, and everyone else was like, I would like to hear that, actually. Do undercut him.
Yeah, it's just like, because I feel like there's this prevailing thought that, like, the jury is this one kind of, like, this huge blob that kind of just roll over one contestant and award another contestant a win. Like, it's good to be reminded that there is dissension amongst, you know, that there's dissension mm-hmm. amongst people out there, and it's not, there are competing factors in how people argue.
for me, like the way that they spoke to Nora, I really, really didn't like that. Like, as I said, the way you make people feel out there is important. The way that they would have not respected her as a player from day one, they don't have to vote for her. Like, that does not warrant their votes, and they don't owe her that vote. But they owe her the chance to speak. Like, she's earned that by being in the final tribal council. The fact that they all shut her down, because yes, she brought up another dating story, and yes, she kind of like was crushing on Dean in this episode. I don't really know where that was going or why that had happened, but like, let her speak, you know, let her have her say, and don't vote for her. That's fine. If you want to like, you know, tune her out at that point or whatever, but you give her the respect as someone who's made the final three, who didn't do anything to you guys, to have her chance to speak. You know, obviously it wasn't something they were going to respect, but she has earned that opportunity. And I think that with the jury, like, it's really all about just kind of choosing your own criteria as a player, having that criteria be something that the jury can like A, respect, and B, believe. And then also just like ticking off things in that criteria. Like for Nora, she was kind of trying to say that she was this like, you know, cerebral player, or not even cerebral, but like not purely emotional. And the jury just couldn't buy that. So they completely dismissed her. And maybe if she had come in being like, I was ruled by my emotions, but what did you say? Like, Survivor is meaningless at this point. You might as well vote for me in protest. No, you know, like that's a good thing. Like, you know, I think it was a losing position for Nora. There's no way she's going to win. And maybe there's no way, there's nothing she can say that the jury won't completely dismiss her. Obviously, we barely even got to see her try, so it's hard to even criticize or validate what she was saying because she was shut down so quickly.
Can I just, again, I'm sorry to keep bringing up my experience, but I guess that's kind of like why I'm here.
As long as it's just the first season.
So just to talk about, you know, you said that, you know, what are the things that a juror should do, and one of the things is, you pose a question, and then you have to get out of the finalist's way and let them respond. Like,
yeah.
And I had this decision in my head when I had written this speech of what I was going to say to Lee, and it's, you know, very well documented what I said to Lee. And one of the things that I was going to say was, I was going to say that you shushed me, like audibly shushed me, so many times in the game, like that. You never gave me a chance to respond. And now I'm going to do the same thing to you, and I'm not even giving you a chance to respond. And I was just going to go sit back down. And then I just thought, that is so stupid. Like, you are robbing him of this moment where, like, he should be able to articulate his game however he wants. Like, you say your piece, but then you must let the other person respond. And I'm so glad that I did that, because I was able to kind of say, you know, tell me, Lee, blah, 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 blah. And then he had this discussion, and it was a good answer. And we kind of had a little back and forth, which was cut out. But like, you have to let people talk. And even if you completely disagree with who they are or what they've said, like, to shut them down, is all you're doing is proving that you were completely jaded from the experience and that you're not willing to grow and learn with your relationship with that person. And if I was Nora, I would be pretty pissed.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is that the way that the old tribal council format was, you could kind of say something scathing to that person. But like, if you wanted to dismiss them, you just wouldn't ask them a question. Whereas like, now it's so open that like they talk, and it's like a more aggressive way to shut someone down, to literally just be communally rolling your eyes at them and just being like, stop talking. It was, I think people were affected by it because it was so confronting how aggressive it was to make her stop talking there. And she didn't deserve that.
Yeah.
But what I did really enjoy, I thought was a really good point by a juror, was Kelly. Obviously, Kelly's going to have the great point. I love what she was saying about Nora and Dean kind of being goats to begin with and how that changes the game. Because, like, that's not nothing. They were like, well, how did Dean get all this information and how did they make it this far? It's like, because it's an easier game to be a goat. Like, the pros are, no one really wants to vote you out. Everyone wants you in the end, so you get more information, you have more room to play. Like, the cons are that you can't win. But for someone like Tommy, who's not a goat, and actually could have been much more threatening than he was, him weaving his way through the game is a much more difficult trajectory than people getting to the end as goats. And I really like that kind of verbalized. Kelly has verbalized a lot of things on the show, I think, that needed to be said.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. I thought it was great. And another reason why I'd love to see Kelly play again.
I've realized that I have so many rants about this, because the next thing I want to move on to is Janet and the Idol Nullifier.
Oh God.
Which we all knew was coming. What is your initial reaction to what happened with the nullifier?
I thought it was so obvious that it wasn't going to happen.
What?
Like, I thought there's no way that they are actually being for real here. There is no way that they are being this obvious. Like, there is literally no jeopardy here. Like, we know exactly what is going to happen. And then that little bit in your brain goes, oh, yes, that means it's not going to happen. Oh, thank God. Thank God. They would never do something this stupid. And they would never do something this obvious. And they would never package it to us like it's exactly going to happen. And they would never show Janet being all getting all her hopes up. And that confessional where she's like crying and she's like, oh my God. Like, I might make it. And you're like, your soul is just being torn in two. And like, just, they would never do this. And lo and behold,
they would never say a woman is going to win and then make it Tommy in the sexual harassment season of Survivor, right? They did. So.
But it's like, it kind of like, it was so obvious. It was kind of like, it's like the Roger Sexton boot in Amazon. It's like, we know
exactly. Your favorite?
It's like, we know exactly what's going to happen here. And it's fine because we want this person to get their comeuppance and we're rooting for Rob and all this blah, blah, blah. But like, why? Like, why did they do this to us? Like,
yeah. They try to make it a little bit suspenseful by saying, like, maybe Dean wants Laura now, but he said in Exits, he was like, they did good editing, but it was just never going to happen. And, like, as a huge Janet and someone who's loved Janet so much, I don't think she should have made it to the end and won, because she would have won. I don't think that was her kind of destiny in this game, because it really would have relied on, like, a late removal from the game of Dan and then the idol and then fire, and it's like, I can't endorse that. Even though I love Janet, like, I feel like her impact on the season is, like, so far beyond the game as defined by Sia Money at this point. And that's okay for me. Like, I don't mind that she didn't make it to the end to win. And I don't even think the idol nullifier is like, an unfair twist as much as anything can be unfair. As long as, like, it's something people could reasonably consider, it's fair as much as an idol is fair. But, like, at the same time, like, the idol nullifier is just such a bad storytelling device. Like, it's just going to be the Janet thing, I would say 99 times out of 100. You're going to be rooting for this underdog. They're going to be really excited. They're going to have an idol play on their hands, and then they're going to be pumped up about it, and then they're going to go home. Like, why do we want that to happen to underdogs? Like, I can't believe a TV show would be aiming for those TV moments, which are, you would think, the objective thing to happen to an idol nullifier, unless, like in David versus Goliath, it's paired with another idol or a vote steal or some other advantage.
I didn't even know what to say. I just feel like it was poor thought that it went there. I feel like that when they were talking about maybe putting another idol nullifier in, they should have said, do you know what, guys? Like, it worked.
Yeah, it worked perfectly, like, against all odds.
It's done. It's done.
Over.
It's done.
It was miraculous that it worked. Don't play with fate again.
Absolutely. And like, I know that it's there because they want to, like, it's like the antidote to putting in so many idols. It's like, well, stop putting in the idols.
It's so obvious. Like, that's the thing that gets so obvious about it, because it's like, well, they have to put in the nullifier. Otherwise, there's like two rounds and people can just idle the way to the end. It's like, not if they just stop hiding the idols. Like, obviously, if there's going to be idols all the way to the end, then I guess they should have a nullifier, because that's terrible. But just take out fire and have idols stop at 5 or 6. And like, we just solved it. You know, at the point where you need two advantages to get some semblance of a natural organic game, we've tied ourselves up in knots. You just go back, you take out the idols, you take out the nullifier, just let people to play the game. Like, I can't believe this has to be said.
The nullifier
also didn't happen.
And I just feel like Australian Survivor unleashed this on the world, and like, we have a lot to answer for. Ziggy, because like, it's just, I don't like it. Like, I just feel like, look, I did not like Dan Rengering, whatever his name was. Like, I did not enjoy him as a Survivor player, but like, I felt for him, like, knowing what was going to happen. Like, it worked out perfectly and it was great. But like, I've had an idol, and like, it is the best feeling knowing that, like, no matter what, I am not going home tonight. Like, it's so comforting. Like, you know, I am going to get another 2 or 3 days. Like, I'm going to get to play another challenge. Like, I'm going to have this one moment where I can always say it, you know, like, and it just undercuts so much. And in that way, I guess it's terrible when you're the person with the idol, but like, it's good in the fact that it keeps the game on its toes when nothing is certain anymore. And I guess probably the untold part of it is it elevates the status of your immunity challenge win, because like, that's something that like at this point can't be messed with. So I guess there are some positives to it, but like, if that had happened to me, I would have flipped my lid, because, and you can see that Janet, like at the finale when he's like, she's like, I hate the nullifier. Like, why is it at five? Like, she's saying it. And then Jeff's answer is so not an answer. He's like, do you know who doesn't love the nullifier? Doesn't hate the nullifier? Dean. And she's like, that's not an answer. Like,
yeah.
That is it. That is like, oh my God. Like, yeah. Jeff, like, you're not making us feel any better. It's like, that is that. When he answered that, I got the clearest sense of like, we're just trying to stuff shit up. Like, we are just, we are just here to.
Survivor's meeting was vote for Nora. That's the tagline.
It is. And you saw it in his eyes in that moment. It was like, he couldn't even empathize. He wasn't even like, I know. Like, he was just like, but you know who didn't love it? Like, you know, just one person. Like, because guess what? We all think it's crazy. Like,
yeah, stop. No, and he tried to assign meaning to it by being like, if you hadn't told Tommy, you would have been fine.
Yes.
And it's like, no, that's not true, because it was literally the last time you could play it. It is a defensive tool. It's insurance. If you put it on the person who you're voting for, then it doesn't even matter if they have an idol. You just assure that they're going home. So I just, not even Dean could have screwed it up so badly that he didn't play the nullifier at the last possible time for no reason and allowed Janet to play a secret idol. Like, there was no winning here for Janet. So, like, let's just make that clear. Like, she didn't do anything wrong. Maybe he would have not chosen the nullifier if he hadn't known. But, like, probably, almost definitely, it was going poorly for Janet. It's terrible. It's like you can't even protect or strategize around it. Like, and the dad thing was particularly unfair because you could, you know, it had never been in the game. And I hate when they have advantages that they haven't told people about. At least give people knowledge so they can try and, like, work within it. At this point, it has been in the game. You could reasonably expect it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't straight suck. Like, it just sucked. Like, that's all it is. It's a storytelling element. It sucks.
Do you have any, like, if you, like, gun to your head, yes or no, like, do you think it is, and I know everything is situational and that's our go-to answer, blah, 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 but, like, do you think that people should tell other players about their advantages or keep them to themselves?
So, like, it's so hard.
You're not allowed to explain it. You're not allowed to explain your own.
It's situational. Like, when did you start making the rules of this podcast? You remember who the host of the podcast is here?
Survivor Global with Nick.
No. Taking back the reins.
Well, it's because I value your opinion so much.
But I would be making things up because I honestly think it's that situational. I mean, yes, if nullifiers and stuff are going to become more prominent, then the tide shifts to keep it secret. Which I don't even know if that's better TV.
Okay, so how about this? Shannon Gates plays Australian Survivor Season 7 or whatever it is.
How did you know?
And you are walking down the path. You find an idol. You've got a faction of people who you're working with, a faction of people who you're not. Like, what does your gut tell you to do?
It's impossible to say. Do I have allies? Or quick. Are you?
You're in Final 7. You're in the middle. Go. What do you do?
That late in the game, at that point where it's so individual, like, I would think maybe you keep it to yourself.
Okay.
But it's hard. Like, are you on the bottom anyway, but you need to get through a few more rounds, so you need to, like, endear trust with people? So many elements come into play. At a point where nullifiers are a consistent part of the game, you would be thinking much more about keeping it to yourself, which is maybe what they want. Maybe they want that moment a lot more where people are just kind of surprising everyone with it. But so much TV comes out of making it public, whether it is sharing it with allies, whether it is doing that, you know, to your own detriment, whether it's wearing it around your neck and trying to, like, get another tribal council out of it. Like, there's a lot to be said about the intrigue players can get out of making it public and trying to do different things with the idol. So I don't even know why they would necessarily try and push the tide so much to keeping it secret rather than letting those dynamics just play out based on situations, relationships, play styles. Again, it's like, let the players decide their own fate.
Are the rules different for advantages as opposed to idols?
Are there advantage nullifiers now? Like, are there...
I don't know.
It depends. Like, if the advantage it is also not super powerful, then it can have more impact maybe by using it as a, like, social tool than an advantage as well. So then maybe that one you're using. All this stuff is so situational.
Yeah.
But really just never again with the nullifier, right? Like, just make a pure round. It's so easy. This is the kind of thing I'm coming to Jeff with in my new job as the complainer correspondent, which is, I just came up with the title, and I'll just tell Jeff what we're complaining about. He just listened to this podcast. How have I been so negative? I did not expect this.
I just bring it out in you.
Yes, that must
I don't think you have been. I think you've been, my prevailing thought here is that you have been very high on the season's end, so... Yeah.
And on that note, let's talk about Dan.
Literally
next in my notes. I actually just did want to kind of touch on the show's response in the last few days. which I did say made me feel a lot better, but I just want to like commend the show at this point again for doing that. And I feel like I can now feel like we can be on the right track, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how they can kind of take these words into the actions of the next season. And, you know, as people have said, like other contestants have felt uncomfortable but not had a place to do it. So Kelly has done something here so important to make sure that hopefully no one will ever feel that way and not feel like lost and with no one to talk to ever again. So I think I actually feel like so much good has come out of this, not because of the show, but because of Kelly and the show finally listening to Kelly and letting her drive the narrative.
So what are some of the changes they're saying that they're putting in?
So they're going to have like a third party, which is really important. They're going to have like an extra person there for people to talk to. It's going to be a larger part of their training preseason with people, just like a greater, I think, awareness, more of a contact point. I don't want to like mince their words because they're pretty important, probably pretty legal words, but just to have that person there. And even I think just to have the awareness that they did this wrong, to know that you did it wrong means next time you'll do it right. You know, just to even for me to accept that you could do better is such an important first step.
Yeah, I think that the show dealt with it finally really, really well. There was a lot of acceptance of culpability. I think it was a great decision to bring Kelly, you know, give her even just the act of giving her her own little stool, like, you know, like just these little things that show that this is an unprecedented situation. And I feel like they just like let her talk. And I don't know about you, but whenever I watch a reunion, I just feel like I'm like getting nervous that, okay, Karishma, wrap it up. We're live TV. Like you're speaking mm-hmm. for too long. Jeff needs to get to this person and that person. I don't know. Is that just me? But like, that's how I always feel during the reunion. But like there was none of that when Kelly was speaking. It was just like purely just let her roll, let it continue. She has what to say. I'm glad she acknowledged that she was nervous, that it was like a very pressured situation. Because I don't think she should have to feel like she has all the answers, that it's okay to be in this really strange position that she never wanted to be in. Like,
yeah.
And I really like that, like, she was able to say, like, I'm feeling extremely, like, pressure here, like, and I don't want to get it wrong. And I think that was just – I think it was a really good segment. My wife said that I finally think that they've dealt with it properly.
It's terrible for Kelly that this has to be a Survivor experience, but like Survivor is better for it, that she was the person to guide this as she did. And look, you know, you would say just don't cast the dance of the world, but you know, it's a hard thing to do that. You don't know what's
going to happen. But you never know who is.
Exactly.
You never know who is a Dan. It's always the people you least expect. So,
well, I mean, Dan, I think probably would have been if I had to do a draft before the season, I probably would have taken him at first pick just based on like the industry and stuff. But like,
but that's like, you know, that's,
let's not do that draft.
That's your own, its own type of, like, you know, predatory.
Dan is his own thing. He did what he did. But like in a different world where the show is handling it well, it is a terrible, ugly incident at the merge. They warned him at the beginning when Kelly said it, and he's taken out at the merge. And it's like the show moves on from that. It's a very ugly thing, but we move on from it. Whereas like the reason that it will define the season going forward is because the show dealt with it so poorly and that it was wrapped up so long after it should have been. So that's mostly on production. So as long as they have the right protocols going forward, like, this kind of thing will be handled well, and that's what's important. Because as you said, there might be the bad eggs. You can't really protect against it other than like trying to be super vigilant in casting, but impossible to know. So you have to know that like if it happens, the response is very swift, the response is really clear, and that we can then move on from it and have it not define the entire season.
Yeah, I think that like it's just such a shame, and like watching Dan's son come out for the family visit was one of the most heartbreaking things I have ever watched. Like this kid, like this amazing tender moment between father and son, unprecedented in the fact that he was so young. He looked so happy. He would have been so excited for his friends at school to see it. And it's just like there was just so few winners in any of this situation. Like, and I guess that the only winner in the end is
the future,
people in the future that this might happen to. And like, you know, like sometimes, you know, you've got to, you know, like what is the saying? Like crack a few eggs to make an omelet. Like you've got to go through the bad times to get to the good. Like if it helps in the future, then I guess all these people just have to wear it. But like, God, like it was a grim, it was the grim reality of this season. And I'm glad that it was wrapped up in a nice way.
Yeah, I mean,
as nice as can be.
Yeah, like I was disappointed in the show. And even if they had made all the changes, I don't feel I could have like moved forward in good faith without hearing from them that they screwed up. Because I know that's a really hard thing for them to admit, to the point where you think Jeff is like faking complete ignorance about his show, rather than to be like, I don't know how we got here, you know? So like the fact that they could come out, the show and Jeff at the reunion, and be like, well, you were right. And, you know, in saying that, we were wrong. And that's a really big thing for me. That's the way that I'm able to move forward. It's like, you can't change the past, but as long as you can accept culpability and make change, that's how we're going to move forward. And like, I think that we are, because the next thing on my list is season 40.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about Winners at War, a shocking new theme that we have heard about that is going to air roughly around the same time as All-Stars, Nick. So that'll be fun.
Winners at War is brand new information.
So was All-Stars, actually, at the time. I love that, like, in the 90-second preview, they gave us everything. They gave us every cast member. They gave us Edge of Extinction, you know, $2 million for the winner, the fire tokens, like, every twist that has been kind of in the ether for months. And Australian Survivor will take 6 months to, like, reveal one person's, like, foot, you know? Like,
I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts on the preview. First of all, February and onwards is just going to be a hectic time to be a Survivor fan.
Quit your jobs. That's the official motion that we are saying.
What is it?
Quit your jobs. You can't do both. You can't do Winners at War and All-Stars and have a working profession. So unfortunately, you're going to have to put in your notice now for February.
Go on a break with your significant other.
Oh, definitely.
Just put the dog and cat in boarding or something like that.
That's a bit far, but yeah.
No, I think I'm so excited. I'm like so pumped. Like, and I hate that it's happening at the same time, because like I want to watch, I want to like consume every single piece of Winners at War content imaginable.
Yes.
And I know that that's just not going to happen. And
did you quit like, your job?
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about All Stars, but just like, just it's just like, oh wow, like I feel so honored that it's on at the same time. But like the fan in me is like, who cares about Nick from Australian Survivor playing? Oh, I don't want to watch that. I want to watch Parvati come back. Like,
okay, well, don't compare yourself to Parvati. Why would you do that? Compare yourself to like Sarah Lucina. Give yourself a fighting chance.
I felt that kid, that Survivor kid in me, just like my heart just started like pulsating when I saw like Parvati and Ethan and like Denise, like
Jeremy.
Oh my God. Like, oh, like it's just going to be so good. Like, and even if it's like a subpar season, which like if it ends up being like a game changes, like,
oh my God,
doesn't matter.
That like, doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
No, it does.
Like, it really doesn't.
It
because
does.
I get to see Parvati play Survivor again. I get to see Sandra play Survivor with Amber. I'm so excited to watch Amber play Survivor. Like, how? Like,
yeah.
Like Danny Boatwright? Like, what? Like Yule? Like, I seriously have had such a fangirl reaction to this that I'm so excited. I'm like being just incoherent. I'm literally just listing names, like, because I am that thrilled for it. Like, oh, what are your thoughts?
You've now terrified me by bringing up game changes. Like, I hadn't thought about it because I was just really pumped up, but I'm scared now because Game Changers is one of my worst seasons of all time. Like, I don't want to see that happen to my favorites. I don't want to see Parvati get Sareed. I don't want to see any of that.
Game Changers.
Oh my God.
I never thought that Game Changers was as bad as everyone made it out to be.
Like, Game Changers.
But like, it was the only thing that was the main thing that was bad about it was like so many questionable players like made it far. Whereas like I look at this cast and it's like, go name the questionable players for me.
There's three of them.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. There's three. And if those, like, three... Who are your three, by the way?
This is me now. Like, Sarah Lucina, like, I think will do very well. I didn't need to see her. Ben, I would have much rather seen, like, a old school male. And Nick Wilson, again, it's like pretty recent. Yeah. It's like I just saw it. So I feel like those are the three for me. But sure.
So even if they are the final three.
Oh, my God. Like, that's why are you doing this? Are you bringing me down?
Even if they're the final three, we go in the last 2 weeks of the show, we're going to have like six other people that
if
are
they're
like.
If the final three, it's a terrible season, Nick. Like, I just want you to know that.
But what I'm saying is that, like, it's like I felt from Game Changers that, like, other than Suri, like, the end run was, like, just grim. And, like, it was just a grim, grim lineup. It was like, it's impossible for that to happen this time. Like, I never really cared this is so strange, but I never really cared too much about the winner of a season. I care about just, like, am I going to get to watch my favorites for as long as possible? And obviously I want my favorites to win, but, like, you know, and, like, the fact that Aubrey didn't win Get Co Wrong, like, doesn't, like, minimize the fact that I got to watch every second of the show had Aubrey in it. You know, like, that's the way I approach it. So I'm so excited for Winners at War. I'm even excited about Edge of Extinction.
No, Nick.
Simply because I don't want anyone to come back from it. But simply because that, like, if Parvati gets voted off in the first episode, which is a very likely scenario, I'm going to get to watch Parvati for the rest of the season because I can't imagine anyone pulling the sail.
Right. I mean, I agree that the cast is so amazing. I get what you're saying, that, like, even if that's the final three, you still have at least two of the other players that you're spending 14 weeks with. I mean, you're spending, they're all on Edge of Extinction. So we're getting them the whole time. But for me, look, Edge of Extinction is a very big worry. I have to hope that it's minimized the way that Island of the Idols was and doesn't define the season the way that the last Edge of Extinction did, because the Edge of Extinction is my least favorite season of all time. I hate the twist.
That is such a big call. Holy.
Because it did, because, you know, if they were to say Survivor will go on forever but be Edge of Extinction, like, I'd probably stop watching. That's a big thing for me to say. It goes against everything I love about the show, where it's like, not only are you voted out and you get to stay in, which I love, Nick, let me just tell you. Like, when it happens to you and the fact that we're having this conversation based on it, I love it. But, like, so that takes away the values of the game. The fact that it's just so flawed, it makes it a better thing for you to be voted out, because you go hang out with the jury, you don't have to piss anyone off, you can have as many naps as you want, save the paranoia, save the strategy, save the energy for the last 6 days, pull all your ideas, become the avatar of Edge of Extinction for the jury. You want to get voted out. You want to lose that first Edge of Extinction challenge so you can nap some more and come back on day 35. So I hate it as a twist so much. I hate how it neuters the game. If Parvati gets voted out day one, that's devastating. But let me be devastated. Let me have that emotional reaction. I think the worst type of TV is TV that makes you feel nothing. When Tony got voted out of Game Changers, I hated it, but I was devastated. When David, who I love, was voted out of Edge of Extinction, I felt nothing, because I was like, I'm sad, not really, because he's there, but I don't want him to go back, because it would be hard to root for anyone to come back from Edge of Extinction and win, and I don't want to, like, have to root against David. So I just felt very confused and vague and nothing.
Hope? Didn't you feel some hope? Like, I was...
No, because I didn't want the person who was on Edge of Extinction to win, so even if it was David. So that was a weird place for me to be.
Maybe this is because I don't really, like... The winner is always good to know, and I love finding out who the winner is, but, like, I was hoping that Aubrey would get back in so that she could get to play some more Survivor. And, like, and I didn't think that she was going to win. I didn't think the person who was going to come back was going to win. So it never factored into my mind that, like, I would have to worry about that reality. Unfortunately, I did. But, like, I was hoping for my favorites to get another shot. And, like, and if Adam gets voted out in the first episode, I'm going to be sitting there, like, hoping that he gets another shot through, you know, to get back into the game, to play some more, like, even if he doesn't win or whatever. Like, there's that hope, which Edge of Extinction, I'm trying to find the silver lining, Shannon.
For me, I need it to be as minimized as possible, and I just need the players to play the game and have Edge of Extinction be a really, really, like, a side note. Like, I need them to be revolving doored out, even whoever it is, because I need Edge of Extinction to not be a part of this. Even if it's Tony, who is my second favorite player of all time, my favorite winner, I love Tony Vlacos so, so much. And to get him on my TV is a rarity. And he's the one who's going out first, by the way. But, like, then if he comes back at the merge or at the, you know, God forbid, the final six, which is a terrible place for people to come back, then he should be revolving doored out of the game. That is not how I want anyone to win. Even Tony. Suri, maybe, you know, they owe her one. But, like, anyone should not be doing that. And the fact that it had the fan response that it did, And to bring it back, this is why I'm saying that Jeff isn't listening. And this is exactly what the complainer correspondent would go to Jeff and be like, that's a slap in the face. Like, why did you trial it in 38, which they clearly did for 40? Like, the trial failed. So it's crazy that you would bring that back for all winners. You tried it. It didn't work. Why? What was even the point of trialing it if you were going to do it anyway? It's irrelevant.
But in their mind, it did work.
How?
The amount of people that were speaking about it. That's all they care about.
I'm just going to stop tweeting about the show.
That's all they care about. They don't care about us, like, super fans agonizing over the realities. They do not care. They care that people are talking about it. It's making conversation and that it keeps Survivor in the water cooler conversation after all these years. And it's just like, I don't know. I just feel like we're just going to have to resign ourselves to the fact that these things are going to be in the game. And, like, the more you push against it, the more you just end up like hating them, and like the complainer correspondent in you is like wants to push, but like, you know, just like, just take the pill, just like suck it down and just like enjoy the bliss of you're going to get to see Tony sitting under a rotting flag for 14 weeks.
Oh gosh, that's not how I want to see, you know, I don't know, that's not what I want of Tony. I'm happy for my memories of Tony to be Kageyan. I don't know, it's just, it's a hard one. It was a hard one to swallow at the time as the rumors were coming out. Like, oh my God, all winners. How cool is that? Oh my God, this cast is amazing. They got freaking Danny back. They got Ethan. They got Yule, like Rob and Amber together. There's so many things. And then to hear about Edge of Extinction, also it was like quite soon after Edge of Extinction had ended. It was like, well, at least we have Australian Survivor All-Stars. But then I saw the preview.
Oh, didn't you know that's Edge of Extinction as well?
Don't even do that to me. You know, like, I'm back now, kind of, because the preview was so epic and I saw, like, Tony and Parvati give back-to-back confessionals. Like, I can't not, I'm not a monster. Like, I'm not a robot. Like, obviously, I'm pumped up about it. You know, I'm concerned. Clearly the theme of this podcast is me, my complainer correspondent stuff, but those are my concerns, but I'm still pumped up. Like, I'm still pumped up. It's a crazy cast.
What about the thing about the fire tokens?
So the fire tokens, did you watch The Genius?
Yes, I've seen season one and half of two.
People should know that I mentioned The Genius in my wedding speech. This is the kind of person that I am. Garnets and fire, like, that kind of stuff is so cool to me. I just think that for Winners at War, like, it's the season that you don't need anything for. Like, let the cast play, throw in a couple of idols, and just, like, let them have it. Like, I'm worried it'll be overstuffed, especially since we're hearing it's not going to be 90 minutes. That's my concern. I actually think that the fire tokens could have been their own seasonal theme, because there's, like, a lot maybe to be mined there. And it was cool hearing Yule's voice talk about it, because he's going to – some very smart players are going to make something out of this. But I worry about its interplay with Edge of Extinction, and I'm just concerned there's way too much in this pie right now.
Yes, that's my thought exactly. I am surprised that it wasn't its own season. Like, I'm very –
especially because they need season themes because they're just in Fiji.
Yeah, well, that gives me then the thought that whiteboard that Jeff talks about must be stuffed with many more ideas. Like,
oh God, let me get in there, start erasing some of the whiteboard.
Chief whiteboard eraser correspondent.
Oh my God, I want to work for Survivor and just be the person with the permanently sour face, just yelling at the crew. Like, that's clearly where this is going to go.
Why is this chick on the payroll?
Oh my God. Okay.
No, but I like, we're just going to call them garnets. Yeah. Like, we can just all, we can do that. Okay, cool.
Garnets, there's so much to be done with it. I'm just concerned about time.
Yes. I think it's going to be very interesting. I feel like that the show needs to be bigger. Like, it needs to be longer. Like you said, like, that there's just too much.
We need about as much as we get for Australian Survivor.
Yeah.
4 hours a week.
Tell me who, and again, I'm going to put another restriction on you.
Give me
your top, I'll give you five this time. Your top five people that you are excited to see.
I cannot do, I gave you my 17.
Shannon, five. I make the rules. Survivor Global, sick Giganza.
I feel like I want to get the, because I had like who I think will do well, because we had a question about that. Tony.
We can ask that as well, but who are the five that you're just like, that your heart kind of just like, give me five, go.
So I feel like Rob and Sandra have been a little bit like undermined to me because I just saw them. Because otherwise I would have had Sandra, but I'll go Tony, Parvati, Jeremy, Natalie, Yule. I'm leaving out. Oh, then Ethan. Why did you make it five? Give me 10. I think those are the five. Ended at Yule.
Okay.
Kim, I can't. Denise, stop it. Please stop.
I'm most excited for Parvati, obviously. Denise, unreal that Denise is back. Adam, because he's a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. and I'm dying to see this. I am chomping at the bit to see Natalie. Chomping to see Natalie back. Chomping at the bit? I don't know. And and the other one for me, a complete curveball, is Amber. I never thought that I would be – I love Sandra, but for the exact same reason you said, there's other people that I'm keen to see. But, Amber, what? I feel like I'm back. I'm, 12 years old again. I'm, sitting in my living room watching Survivor Australia. How? And she's there with her husband. Yeah.
There's a lot of the old school winners where it's who are they in 2020? That's what's interesting to me. There's a lot of new school winners that I really like Wendell, for example, but it's I feel like I currently know who Wendell is compared to who is Amber with four daughters who's been married to Rob for, 15, well, however many years it's been. Who is Parvati, who was the vixen who's married with a baby? I'm so intrigued by that.
Totally.
Who is Yule, who apparently is the reason Facebook is spying on us? Who is that person? That's why I keep yelling into my computer that I'm rooting for Yule. In case he can hear.
We love you, Yule.
this cast could just, they can carry anything. That's why it's they don't need to be scared. Don't be scared. Edge of Extinction is a scared twist. It's oh my God, we need these characters. It's we actually don't need any one person because the cast is that good. That's why you don't need Edge of Extinction. Because even if, God forbid, you're losing your Tonys and your Parvies early, you still have freaking Sandra. You have this cast so stellar that they'll carry it. You don't have to be scared. Tony's my favorite player of all time. I'll take my episode of Tony anytime I can get it.
Your episode.
Yes, that one. Besides Edge of Extinction. But that one episode of gameplay, I will take it.
I just never thought there would be a world where Parvati or Tony would be playing again. So this is amazing. Now I'm just
who are the snubs? That's what we should. JT. I feel like I always take JT.
No.
My husband is devastated at the lack of JT. Besides Steven, I think he's the biggest JT fan in the world.
No.
But a lot of the old school winners would be fun. Earl, I know, I think he just had a baby. He was kind of talked about.
Richard is a very insane snub there.
But a contentious player, and I think that they didn't want to, kind of dive back into that well. Tina.
I feel like we've seen Tina. We got Blood versus Water Tina. That was done. Tom, we didn't need Tom. I'm trying to think. Who's some other?
Todd. Todd would have been great.
Okay.
And Todd's a very different type of male winner.
I think Todd was a no-brainer. I know that he has all these issues and stuff. But
he's okay now.
But I feel like he's okay now. And we've had recovering alcoholics, or we've had people who people who had social issues that they've overcome. We've had those people on the show before.
What's really interesting is winning Survivor when you're especially so young changes you, I would think, even more so because you're so young and you get all this money. And if you look at a lot of the really young winners, that has been a kind of consistent factor. So to kind of have Todd have been that person, have got the money, have then had struggles with it, and then to have kind of come back from it, again, it's who is this person in 2020? Even more intriguing than Todd, who in himself is such an intriguing character.
Who do you... Sorry, I had a question, and it was, would you... And how would you have reacted if Chris Underwood was on the cast?
Oh, Nick. Do we need more of this type of person that I'm being on this season, on this podcast? Not well.
Yeah, I know that, but is there would there have been if they pulled out Ben and put in Chris, would there have been a tiny part of you that was all right, mate, show me what you got?
Look, it would have been fine because, even the three that I'm more down on, they still won the game, it's still interesting, and there's still 17 other people who are carrying it in this incredible way. But good call not to, and I would say as I said, I just feel the more recent winners are just a little bit less interesting because we just saw it. So, any time it can be a little bit more old school, I thought was more interesting, even if it's, 20-style old school rather than, the most recent season.
Now, I'm not going to ask you. I've been, firing these, difficult questions at you the whole time, and I'm not going to put you on the spot yet without having digested everything.
I'm just trying to like work out when I lost control of this podcast, but anyway.
The moment you texted me saying, hey,
fair enough.
Who are your early front runners for winner picks?
Okay, we got a question. Because I actually did a really fun draft before we even knew who the cast was with all the winners ever with some RHAP people. Mm-hmm. But that was before we knew about Edge of Extinction, which obviously changes things. I would say, so now that I have to kind of keep in mind Edge of Extinction, so challenge wins, idols, but also amazing social game, I've got Jeremy, Wendell, and Natalie. But pre-Edge of Extinction, I felt really good about Sarah as well. What about you?
They're very good calls. I've got Natalie as my winner pick. I'm just planting the flag now.
Yeah, she's a good one.
I'm just going to go with it. Natalie's my winner pick. I feel like Natalie is so underrated because she is the perfect. I think this is so pivotal. Having the perfect level of care about Survivor. You can't care too much that it's debilitating, but you can't be like completely blasé that you're not connected. And I think that she is connected enough. But she doesn't, she's not going to agonize over decisions that she needs to make. So Natalie is my winner pick. And I think that other people who are in the mix are, I think that Denise actually does have a really good shot. And I also think that, give me Nick as well, because I feel like he will be considered like the new kid on the block and that people won't take him seriously. And that's what we'll get into the end.
And the game has shifted so much, even so recently, that people who played even 5 years ago, like, it's so different from that. And it's so much more, even more idol dependent and everything like that. So to have people who've played like in the mid-30s is like an advantage, even beyond having played in the mid-20s. So that's something as well.
I think that Ethan and Danny could make a run. Like, I feel like Danny is like situated well because she will by far like have the least known about her, like by a country mile. Like there is no one there that will know, like who will know anything about her beyond I consider myself like a very knowledgeable super fan, and I'm like, I am coming up short on what I know about Danny Boatwright. Like,
But even with Danny, like her type of gameplay is like a dinosaur in this era. Even like with the Tommy game, like she was that quiet and that social that it's like even beyond what I feel was validated in the season. So for me, I think she's not quite threatening enough. Whereas like the Jeremys, the Wendells, the Natalie, they still have control. They still played in like a pretty modern era. They can still be really threatening, but also kind of maybe kind of shroud that a little bit.
Like, the other thing, and this kind of links into what you're saying, is that, like, Survivor evolves, and it is a fast evolution. Like, and I know that American Survivor has kind of, like, had, you know, 40 seasons to kind of, like, evolve. Having played season one and then season four of Australian Survivor, there is an evolution there that you have to be able to, you have to be able to kind of think on your feet much quicker than you would have had to. And this is not a spoiler, but like this is definitely something that I spoke about on day one of All Stars, that the game is moving at a far greater pace than it did in season one. So
to be fair, like between season one and season two of Australian Survivor was like a 30 season evolution, like just because like season one was so outdated.
Exactly. So imagine what like Ethan, who when he played in season, he's probably the furthest back, isn't he? He's like
he and also like Amber All Stars, yeah.
Yeah, Amber as well. Yeah. Now, but Amber's, you know, been plugged in with, you know, Boston Rob and stuff like that. Like Ethan's going to need to, like, there is a lot of history he's going to need to make sure he's across, and, you know, relationships and things. So I don't know. I think I'm fascinated. I am absolutely fascinated by this season, and I have predictions of who's not going to do well, and like obviously that is like upsetting, but like it's just going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, we're excited about it. I'm going to take control back in my podcast and get to the chizzy. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, the final chizzy of the season, which is purely decorative because we can't give out like a real like a seasonal chizzy because we didn't do the chizzy every week, but it's always fun to do it and hear the theme song. pretty obvious at this point. There are only five people as well. But 3 points to Tommy, who was great, you know, all season, but particularly in this episode, love the fire move. Dean, I've spoken about how I really loved his awareness in this episode. And also, like, he got 2 jury votes. Like, it's impressive from Dean.
I was so surprised that he got 2 jury votes.
Like, he earned those jury votes.
I'm just so used to it being like, I just feel like, there's always so many shutouts that like, I was impressed.
Yeah. And then the last point I guess I'm going to give to Lauren, who didn't do a lot here, but like Nora, I feel was like badly played by Tommy to take him through to the end. Janet again was fruity either way, but like was probably lucky to even make it to the finale or to make it to the final five with Dan being removed. So Lauren, I think, played a really great game and I just kind of wanted to credit that.
Yeah, I've decided to give, obviously you have to give, do I have to give the 3 to Tommy? I was trying to figure out a way to, that I could be contrarian and not give it to Tommy.
Did you figure out a way?
Well, I thought that, you know, you could maybe make the argument that like based just on this episode alone, that like if you disregard everything that happened beforehand, that Dean did have the best episode.
No, I thought this was Tommy's like best episode of his season. So I was like, as an episode, and definitely do it by the episode. So if you think that, give it to Dean. But I just thought Tommy was the best in this episode.
Look, here's why, right? I believe that the whole, like he did all that goose chasing around, you know, trying to find all the idols and blah, blah, blah. And then Dean just kind of like swooped in at the end when it really mattered and like found it. And it's like a perfect metaphor for like old school Survivor versus like new school Survivor. It's like you can put in all the grunt work with everyone, but if you have some little trinket at the end, like you get the goods. So it was kind of cool that didn't end up panning out on a wider scale with Dean winning. But I thought it was really cool. I really loved that whole like kind of the fact that the idols had multiple stages to it. I hope we get more of that. I liked Dean in that moment. I thought that Dean was not afraid to kind of come out his skin a little bit at the final tribal. I thought it was really good. Obviously he got caught up in a few lies, but I don't know, I feel like yeah, who hasn't in their time or stuff? I feel like there was some really good stuff there from Dean. So I don't think it's as cut and dry. And the other thing is, I think that Tommy's that they had to make a meal out of the thing about him not wanting Lauren to make fire. And I think that was like way maybe more revisionist history than necessary. Him saying, "I don't know how to make fire. I don't know how to make fire." Like, a lot of people would do that not because they want Dean to get the fire, it's just because like maybe he actually can't make fire, and it's easy to say afterwards in your confession where it's like, I could have made that fire.
But he literally was like teaching Dean how to make fire.
No, he wasn't. Like he even said, he goes, I don't have that much like, you know, experience. He actually says, I haven't made a fire since I've been here, but I know how to make fire.
And it's okay, like, but all things being equal, even if Tommy is bad at fire and Dean is bad at fire, she should still really be taking Dean to the end, because then Tommy is like a much bigger jury threat, so then do it based on that. But like, he managed to convince her that somehow he was the right person to take because he was like superhumanly bad at fire, which like I don't think he was.
Convincing Nora to take him is the right.
You wanted to win.
Is
she's
the
still
right.
A human being. Like, he still played his play.
I think that convincing Nora to take him was the great part, but like the whole thing about like, yeah, and then he was like going and like wide anting Lauren's chances of how to learn how to make. Oh, all right, let's give it a rest.
Like, I think it's fun. Now you're the bar humbug person. Now you're the complainer correspondent.
I think it's fun, but I don't think it's what happened. I think that's like, that's, you know, we need to make this winner look good. Like, he's getting the winner edit bump there. But that's just me personally. So
did I fall for a winner edit? No, I think it was fun. I think he did well.
I'm going to give my 3 to Dean. Why not? Okay. Just because.
Because this is all meaningless as well. Just vote for Nora.
3 to Dean, 2 to Tommy, and I'm going to give 1 to Nora, because like, I really like the way that Nora like is just herself, and like she was willing to just kind of just be herself, and like if it worked, it worked, and it didn't work because like Survivor is cruel to people who have behaved like themselves. But like, I don't know. I loved the fact that she was just like, in her own Nora way, she thought that going and telling everyone straight up, you're going to fire making, she thought that was currying favor, because one of them's going to go to the jury and they're going to appreciate that she gave them the heads up, right?
She did not like that. Lauren didn't.
Exactly. So in her own Nora way, she was trying something that like she thought was going to work. And I appreciate that, like, in this we are stuck with this shitty fire making thing, right? We're stuck with that. How can players make it their own that it's fresh every time? Like Dom had the whole thing, do I send myself to fire? And then Chris sends himself to fire. Like her, Nora's taken it, is like, all right, I'll be transparent at the beginning with the information. Like, I like that there was like some at least thought as to why she did it. Now, execution was catastrophic. Like, and like now Lauren is like, Lauren was putting on her most congenial face of like, it's all good when she was on the jury. Like, I was in my feelings yesterday. But I think that she still felt some kind of way about Nora. And Nora stuffed it up. But I don't know, I appreciated the attempt.
I feel that with Nora, it's like you win that immunity and that's your move and you get to claim it. And if you make the right move, like maybe some points. Like, again, Nora was never going to win, but like maybe some points. But she made like such an obviously wrong move to take Tommy and send Dean of all people to fire when like he was obviously the other goat. So like she like lost opportunity there and actually like was a detriment to herself and that she made the wrong move. I think I said that when like Sean took Shane to the end and it was like, okay, you've like obviously made the wrong move in like your position of power. And people probably do that, you know, quite a lot of the time, but yeah. Then you just like, it's your opportunity and your platform to show yourself. So like, it's going to have a big impact either way, like no matter which way you go with it.
Yeah.
I want to ask some questions, but first a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
And we are back.
Nick, like, genuinely, it is my podcast. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm like that house guest that, like, walks in, puts their feet up on the coffee table, like, rifles through your magazines, like, maybe eats the last, like, chocolate, like, in the box.
Like, yeah. You're surfing the podcast right from under me while we're on the podcast. It's a very entertaining thread, like, having so much drama.
Haven't you seen all the All-Stars promos? I'm like a huge villain. Like, you know.
I'm going to do the podcast my way.
Yeah. So villainous, Nick.
Oh, my God. I get it now. I get it. I'm on Team Lee. You are Nickish. I took it too far. We had a lot of questions, and we answered pretty much all of them, which should make sense because we talked a lot. We had questions about, obviously, like this, the finale, season 40, my wedding. I think we got to it, but just a couple. The Chizzy on Twitter, I don't know if people have seen that there's a new The Chizzy account, so please follow at The Chizzy. There's going to be an app for next year, calculating the points. People can put in their own points. It's getting to a very important place, I think.
So people can put in their own Chizzy. Oh,
I don't really know because it's being done by Kiwi Jeff Fan, but it sounds like, yeah, like there'll be like a public vote as well, and they'll have like all the Chizzy points from like the past. It sounds amazing. Like, it literally sounds like all my birthdays come at once.
Well, I've just typed in The Chizzy, and, like, there's a couple of accounts that are also called The Chizzy.
Okay, what's the actual app so we can give it to people?
I'm not sure, but The underscore Chizzy, but with two Zs, is a thing called Gentle Jerk.
Okay, that's not it. I think it's literally just... Okay, hold on. So, at The Chizzy...
Oh, here we go. unofficial home of the Chizzy Points.
Yeah, it literally is at T-H-E-C-H-I-S-S-Y. Like, they really got the at the Chizzy. 70 followers.
Oh, the Chizzy already follows me. Okay, well,
I think that they can change unofficial to official home of the Chizzy Points.
I was about to say, yeah. I think that you can officially endorse this, yes?
Oh, amazing. A million times, yes. And their question, well, Kiwi Jeff slash the Chizzy's question, was who would get the seasonal Chizzy? So who do you feel is the best player of the season?
That's a really good question. The best player of the season. I'm going to give it to Lauren.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Lauren. She had the social. She had the strategic. She was in this really strong power pair. She had that idol for like 2 seconds, but like, yeah, she got the idol.
It was fun.
She won an immunity, yes, didn't she?
I think so.
Yes,
yes,
I think she
did. And she was like, I dreamed about this since I was a child. Yes, important stuff.
Yeah. She's a big fan, so she kind of like, she would have been prepared and that showed. And, you know, like at the beginning, she stood out as a big, like, presence, and it's hard to make it through the game as a big presence. So good on Lauren.
Yeah, it sounds like she was running the game, like her and Tommy, but she was like leading the pair. So I would give it to her for that. Like, obviously Tommy also ran the game with her and did manage to make it to the end. But if she had managed it and she was one fire away from doing it, I think she would have beaten him in the end. So she has points there. I feel like that was the most obvious part of Tommy's winner edit, was that we got all of Tommy's story, and like, she was so underserved by the edit. I feel like it was maybe like a 60-40 Lauren, but we got like a 70-30 Tommy. So like, that disparity just made it so clear that like, it was his story and yeah. that, but every time like, you heard people have really genuine conversations about who to take out, it was like, we need to take out Lauren. So she was obviously the threat, but it didn't match up with whose story we were hearing.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, yeah, but she won the Chizzy unofficially because this really doesn't count, and I don't think she'd be put on the app if Kiwi Jeff fan is listening, which he definitely is. Hey. John Johnson asks, of the four winners on Australian Survivor, who would be good on Winners at War?
That's a really, really good question. I don't think I've made any secret about my rankings of the four winners thus far. And I believe that the best winner, it's very close between Jericho and Pia. But I do have to take points away from Jericho because, you know, I covered that season. And one of the things that I uncovered afterwards when speaking to him was that some of the moves he didn't really think through, and they were quite like risky, that they worked, but like, I don't think he realized what was happening for all of them. But he is extremely likable. He was really strong Survivor player, challenge-wise, as well as the social. He was in a really tight pair. He was willing to cut Luke, all that stuff. So I do want to give him the edge, but simply because I feel he's got more bases covered than Pia does. So I think it's like Jericho closely followed by Pia.
I completely agree. I don't think we've discussed, but because we haven't, because Pia hadn't won and then you went on Survivor and I like didn't get to chat with you about it. But yeah, that's exactly, I agree with all of that.
And then Shane third and then Christy fourth.
Yes.
So I believe that the two best players, the two that would do the best would be Jericho and Pia. And I could see Jericho doing really well in American Survivor. Pia maybe not so much because that kind of more stealth game is not super rewarded outside of Australia, I don't believe. But
maybe it is. But I do agree broadly. Yes.
I would love to see Jericho out there amongst the others mixing it up.
He would bring something really different, I think, to like the male cast. And Pia would be fun because she's just so considered. Like she's thinking about how American Survivor isn't really made for her. Like, so she's already like a step ahead. Yeah. I don't know how much that would help, but I'd be interested to like see her try. I don't know like what Americans would do with Christy. It would be like, what is happening? You won the game. Like you won Survivor and you're here with the rest of us. I think they'd be very confused by all of that.
And it's not a one-for-one comparison between her and Nora. Like there's the kookiness, but like very different levels of kookiness, like very different shades. Nora is very aggressive with her kookiness and her belief in what's happening, whereas Christy is not so much. So if anyone out there is thinking that's a comparison, I believe in my experience that that's probably not true. We didn't get to speak about last season of Australian Survivor, and I knew obviously that I was going to play, so I wasn't tweeting about it or anything like that. And it sucks because I cannot verify it, but like with anyone, but Pia was the first Survivor winner that I had ever, ever predicted.
Well, that's convenient. At the one time when you couldn't tweet about the show,
I know. And it makes me so mad. And like, and so when I found out that I was going to play Survivor All Stars, like, I made myself, like, I sat down with my wife. I said, all right, so what are the things that I need to do? And one of them was like, I was like, I am not tweeting and I'm not kind of like commenting on Australian Survivor, American Survivor. Like, I think I did like, I didn't do anything really. And I so badly wanted to put that out there, but I was like, no, I can't because, you know, what if like Pia's out there or, you know, I don't know.
So but she would just like you more. Like, but no, I get
yeah.
it.
And it sucks because, and I picked her from before, like before the show started, like before I even saw the whole cast. Like, I literally like found out her name was on it and like, cause I'm a huge Pia Miranda fan and I was like, she's going to win Survivor. And like, it happened and like, I cannot verify it. I have never, ever, ever, that I put out a tweet like it was last time because like I always pick someone who makes like the final four and I like, and I can never clinch the deal and like it sucks. But anyway, that's my little rant.
Well, I'm glad you have a podcast back that you own that is this podcast where you can, when you can give out those thoughts again now that you've successfully stolen the podcast back from
exactly.
me.
Exactly. See you later, everyone. See you next week on Nick's, what's it called? We need like an SG
Survivor
thing.
Global.
No, we need an SG thing for Nick.
Why not Snakes?
Snakes Global. Snakes Global.
Snakes Global, I think. Why am I helping you with this? I want to retain my podcast. But it's fun because we haven't podcasted all year because you went on Survivor, didn't want to talk about South Africa, didn't want to talk about Australia. Just basically, you know, like when you like get a new job and then you like wish that you could like kind of talk to the person who was like in the job before, but they've abandoned you. That's how I felt.
Well, I was just trying to keep an extremely low profile before I went out there. And yeah, so apologies, but this is probably going to be the last time we're going to podcast for a while because, you know, definitely will not be podcasting, you know, next season because I will not be allowed. So
yeah, no one wants you to come and commentate on All Stars like that. You can't do
exactly,
that.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'll catch you in the deep dive, I guess.
Yeah, so the deep dive has been scheduled since so long. Since before I was born, I knew I was doing this deep dive. So we'll do it. But I, yeah, those are all the questions that we can answer that we didn't already answer in the course of this conversation. But what is the hashtag? Hashtag Snakes Global, I think, is a late one, but hashtag complainer correspondent might be
true.
Hashtag quit your jobs. That's not the official hashtag of the podcast, but you got to do it.
What was the one about the whiteboard? Chief whiteboard eraser. That was good.
No, okay. But, well, hashtag complainer correspondent. And like, yes, I think that we both are saying, like, as our professional opinion, how are you going to get past, like, how are you going to get through a few months of like so much Survivor every week? Like, you really do need to be quitting some jobs. So, yeah.
Do you know what I'm most excited about? And I said this on Twist that I last time I played Survivor, we went on a complete gag order.
But I feel like I tweeted you so much, but maybe you weren't responding. That's it.
No, I was not responding. Like I was not allowed to. We were not allowed to tweet. We weren't even allowed to have an active. We had to be like our Instagram account had to be completely shut down. Like and. You know, I remember like Brooke like sneakily like turned it on and like within 5 minutes we got a message from the publicist saying like turn your Instagram off. Like we were like complete gag order. And as Australian Survivor has gone on, I think the publicity team have realized that the Survivors are a good way to actually get the message out there for the show. Mm-hmm. And now to the fact that they are going to be sending us like photos and videos. Like there was a new video that was released yesterday about my best bits. Best in quotation. and also my little like player profile that I like filmed before I went out there to play All Stars. Like that was released yesterday. And they're sending me like links to like of where I can download it so I can like put the content up. So keep an eye out like on my Instagram and my Twitter because I'm going to be so connected like this time. And it's so much fun. Like it's already so much fun to be able to talk about the season and like get involved and like get people access that they didn't have before because I felt so cut off from the Survivor experience last time, like seeing the fans and talking to them. So I'm really keen. I'm like, you know how much I love Twitter. So like, yes. I'm going to be out there. So
I just remember like tweeting at you about you so much. Cause at the time, like I thought like if you tweeted them a lot, they'll see some of it. But now I've realized like that you can see all of it. Like you're probably going to get to it. So I tweeted so much and like, yeah, I don't think you were responding, but I remember at a point, I think you'd already been voted out and you like DM'd me to thank me for the support. And I was like, oh my God. And I told my family, my mom was like, tell him we love him. So I'm like, my parents love you. And now here we sit fighting over this podcast. Yeah, you going on All Stars and me talking about it. And it's like, it's crazy. That is a crazy thing. I can't believe I get to talk about you on Survivor. Like that is emotional for me. And I'm really, really proud of you. No matter how it goes, not saying it won't go well, but like the fact that you went out there and did it again is very brave. And all I care about, I told you this, is that you had fun and that people were nice to you this time. And I'm just very proud of you.
Thank you so much, Shannon. You have been such a support through all of this. And like, you just like, it's so fun to know that like you get to now, you know, talk about the season and like, I'm just so, so, so grateful for your friendship and you are not spoiled. Like, and I know that everyone would know that you're not spoiled because you hate spoilers, but like there has been absolutely zero spoilers for me.
Nick and I can only talk about me. Like, it's actually really great. We can only talk about my life and that's wonderful. I can't even hear about how Nick is. I don't want to hear anything about you in general.
it's pretty much been that. So thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm super keen to see how the next 6 months pans out in Survivor World for all the fans.
Well, follow us at Nick Iadanza, at Shannon Gates. That's still my handle. I know it's confusing, but anyway, it's really hard to be a woman. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Up feed where you get all of this, Survivor Global, the Australia stuff, everything. We have 5 seasons of Survivor coming in 2020. I will be covering them in some capacity, every single one of them. And I have some other really exciting stuff coming up with Survivor in 2020, but I can't, it's annoying to tease that and not say more, but I can't, I'm not going on Survivor, but there's some cool stuff happening. So I'm just really keen to get into it. So definitely follow us where you will
see. Are you
see
one of the all stars who hasn't been announced yet?
Yes. How did you know? I'm actually going on I'm a Celebrity. Get me out of here. So... okay.
Can I just say a quick story? Can I say one quick story?
Yes.
I was in Sydney for a Survivor press tour last week. And you might have seen some photos online and stuff. And we did a photo shoot and we did a meet and greet with 200 Survivor fans in Sydney. It was unreal. There are some videos on my Insta if you guys want to see what it looked like. And there were so many people who came up to me that, first of all, that were saying like, oh, you know, loved you on the podcast, blah, blah, blah. But Shannon is amazing.
And
if you had a seat at that Survivor fan meet and greet, like you would have been signing posters as well, because there were a lot of Stannons out there. So I just wanted to get that little story out there.
Oh, I love that story. See, this is why I love that we can only talk about me. I'm getting a lot of really great stuff from this relationship.
All right, continue.
That social game is so good right now, Nick. I'm so pumped up about it. All right. Well, that's it. That's all we got. Thank you guys so much for listening. # complainer correspondent. # quit your jobs. Thank you so much, Nick, for being here. We are rooting for you all the way. You have RHAP on your side every step of All Stars. Thank you as well to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to everyone for listening again. We will see you in 2020. Bye.
Bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.